across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late night conversation worth losing sleep over. Danny Kelly in for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
If you're listening last night, I think you know my policy. If we've got some funky incidental music, let it play. More about that later. Hello and welcome, everybody, to 3 hours of the late night here with me, Danny Kelly, sitting in for Ian Lee. Bless him, recuperating from some kind of a streptococci or other, something medical I don't understand. Catherine, of course, is also going to stay with me in the studio, A, to hold my hand, and B, so that some remnant of the normal managerial nameplate above the door remains intact. Welcome to Late Night. We're going to talk about sleep. Contradictorily, of course, on the show, which demands that you stay up. We're going to talk about the worst festival ever. It may have happened today, but you may have better news about that than me. You may have other ideas about the worst festival ever. We're going to have a brilliant story about somebody whose birthday it is today. We're going to talk about all kinds of things. A woman who's had the same job for 70 years. Catherine, welcome.
Hello.
And thank you very much for joining us. You work here.
I'm contractually obliged to be here, yes. But I'm glad to be.
Now, the weird noise, I'm sorry, this is pure coincidence. I was asked to sit in on this show for 2 days and 2 days only, the exact same day that I've taken delivery of what can only be described as a megaphone. I don't want to turn up too loud, but occasionally you'll hear me go, "Hello there, welcome to the show, and I'll do a broadcast through this megaphone. I'm across the other side of the studio right now." It also
does, and I've got to be careful how loud is it, that thing you heard before, you can set off a siren.
I won't be doing that too often. I need this, though, because for reasons that Catherine will explain soon. Welcome aboard, everybody. Let me tell you two more things about the show. You can contact us about anything you want to talk about, because we're going to babble on, I hope entertainingly, and I hope interestingly. I was going to say educationally, but you've got the BBC for that, haven't you? We're going to babble on about certain things that have happened today and take them off, if not at tangents, then certainly into the rivulets that they deserve. We don't want to be going necessarily in a straight line. And tonight, we're going to start by talking about sleep. And I say this is counterintuitive because by now, some people will already be in bed and people will be going to bed in the next hour and a half, 2 hours, as this show winds its way through its course. But we don't want you to go to sleep. So if we start to get too sleepy, I will let off the siren again. Let me just get the volume setting right. Oh, that's perfect for radio.
Nice and rousing.
Horrible noise, isn't it? Catherine, you can get in touch with us about anything you want to get in touch with other than the things we're talking about and the things we're talking about on 0344 499 1000. I'm going to say it again, 0344 499 1000. Thank you to everyone who phoned last night. Looking forward to them and other people ringing in this evening. And secondly, of course, those of you who don't know anything about me, I broadcast these days on Talk Sport. I'm not an expert, but I'm a talking head about football. But my background is in popular music. I was the editor of Enemy and Q in my time, which I'm inordinately proud of that, when they were both great magazines. And therefore, I have a vast and somewhat convoluted and higgledy-piggledy knowledge. It's like, as I said, the foul rag and bone shop of the heart, really. I have a vast knowledge of popular music. So if you want to come on and ask me any question, if it's just trivia, I'll probably get it wrong. But if you ask me why, a man came on yesterday and said, why do rappers insist on using their name in every song? And I told him it's to do with slavery, and we got really into it. Catherine's also got something about music she wants to talk about a little later on. But I will. The surgery is open. The music doctor is open. If you want to talk to me about music and ask me a question, it's 0344 499 1000. You can text 87222, then the word talk. And we've got two Twitter addresses, at Talk Radio. But if you want to talk to me personally, it's at Danny Kelly Words. I hope the show will be as lively and entertaining as reasonably amusing as it was last night. Catherine, you started this. So what I'm going to do, we're going to spend the first 45 minutes. As I say, this is a late night radio show, and the last thing you want is people going to sleep because you want them to listen. Now, people, of course, do often fall asleep to the radio, and many of you will be staying up by the time we get to 1 o'clock because maybe your work requires you to be up late. Maybe you've got a newborn baby, in which case, congratulations. Hope you're all healthy. Maybe you're one of those people who just likes the nighttime, and maybe you can't sleep. So we're going to talk about sleep for the next 45 minutes. I'm going to play some tunes about sleeping and much else besides. But Kath, you brought this up because, well, we found a story in the newspaper today. Tell people why this tiny seed has been planted and is going to produce an oak tree of entertainment.
Yeah, this is the new way of exercising, apparently. It's going to... Where was this gymnasium? There's a gym that's opened...
Sid Cup.
There we go.
Sid Cup in Kent.
It's opened up an afternoon class where people can go and have a sleep. What's it called? Napasizing,
yeah. Now, at first I thought this was a joke, but then I read that there are already plans to extend the scheme to places like Glasgow. Now, this is something to do with the stress of modern living, they're saying.
I was thinking it's finally a regime I can get on board with because, yeah, the stress of modern living, the fact that people are running around after children and don't have a spare time for the essential, which is sleep, means that, you know, they think that by having this kind of regimented appointment to sleep, it might be helpful.
You go there in your lunch hour. Let's say you're an office worker. They have got beds, single brackets. They've got single beds and you get 45 minutes kip. And this is supposed to... A, refresh you 100%, and B, they're throwing in some phony baloney about you lose a couple of calories. Well, you may and you may not. Are do you do any exercise?
No.
You're remarkably fit looking for someone who doesn't. Is that fair to say?
I walk the kids to school every morning. That's about it, to be honest.
Yeah, whereas my big walk every day is to the toaster. And that's not so good, is it? Although I swim a lot. Otherwise, of course, let's not lie about it. I'm superbly upholstered. but I'd probably have a heart attack if I didn't go swimming most days, to try and keep my heart low. And that's fine. It's, yeah. You know, the doctors always say to me, Danny, lose some weight. But it's fun. Isn't it? They go, you do, I'm a man of a certain age now, and you do the medical, and they go through all this thing. You're way overweight, Dan. You really should lose some weight. They're very angry with you. And then they go, have you ever smoked? And I go, no, never one cigarette. Oh, you'll be all right. And they send you on your way. They're finding ways to work up to the question, have you ever smoked?
Really?
With all due respect to people who do smoke, they seem obsessed with it, current doctors, and probably for a very good reason. So this was a germ of what we started with. People are talking about sleep as a way of de-stressing yourself and all the rest of it. And it got me thinking about it like this. And luckily, I've got a whole radio show to talk about it, so bear with me. Sleep is one of the most important things we have, one of the most important things we do. Everybody, even you sat there now with your eyes the colour of a post box from lack of sleep, those of you who literally think that you cannot get sleep, you have slept, and you've slept recently, and you will sleep again. But it's an incredibly universal activity, and yet I think it's the most mysterious thing going, Kath. Mm. I'm going to ask, we could have got a scientist on. You know how radio works. You get on a scientist, and they will tell you, I'm not interested in that. I want a kind of, what I want to do here, and remember the number to phone in and help us with this is 0344-499-1000. I want really what it is not stupid people, but ordinary people, me, Kath, and you, to discuss something very serious. I'm going to ask you two questions, Kath. You're an intelligent person, and by your activities on this radio show, it's clear you have a vast range of knowledge. Why do we sleep?
Well, isn't it to do with cell regeneration and...
I can't believe it doesn't happen when you're just wandering around the street. I've got to be honest.
But aren't you when you're expending energy, everything's going, I can imagine that maybe you need to put your engine into standby for a bit.
I mean, it's a great thing. I sleep in spurts. I have 3 or 4 hours in the night, and I love a little kip in the afternoon, like a baby.
Yeah, luxury.
Yeah, but you do it too because of your strange lifestyle, yes?
Yes, I do. It's the only way I survive.
Yeah. But all right, so you think it's about regenerating what was it cells?
Your cells and all that.
Do you mind we hardly know each other?
Yeah.
Do you mind if I say that sounds like a lot of hooey to me?
No, that's fine.
I mean, so first question: somebody tell me really why do we sleep? Now, of course, unless you're one of the unfortunates out there for whom sleep is a trial and something that is nebulous and difficult to get and difficult to grasp, and I understand that could lead to all kinds of mental problems, physical problems as well, which is why my question, why do we need sleep? Because it's nonsense. We thrive on it. And the next thing I want to ask you then, Catherine, is everything else in life, we have defied the clock. Mm. Shops are open 24 hours. The internet means you have information that you used to have to wait for a newspaper to shop to be open. You could give me 100 examples of the way human beings have started to master the fact that the sun goes up and the sun comes down. No, not sleep, though. We might as well be voles in caves, you know, or those mice that you described yesterday, which people use to make false eyebrows, which I still think you were having me on about. Why do we still, the vast majority of us, go to bed when sometime after the sun goes down? Oh, it's time to bed, the sun's going down, we all go to bed, and get up when it comes back up again.
It is because we're animals, isn't it?
Good. Listen, now we're getting somewhere. Good.
It's because we're animals. Mm. And, you know, you can fight certain things and you can try and civilize certain things out of yourself, but sleep is one of the things that you can't do. Although I do wonder sometimes why we need to sleep as long as we do when we don't do as much as we used
physically,
to.
Physically, yeah. We don't go hunting. In my case, in your case, you're not gussying up the cave till all hours.
No, and I'm not, you know, ploughing fields or doing anything like that. You know, I've got a very sedentary lifestyle, actually. But it's
yes and no. Aren't you also trying to pack in a full-time job, a family,
yeah,
a cultural life, all sorts of things would have done in the past?
I guess so. But it would seem that I've got a lazier lifestyle than my forefathers, and yet I need more sleep than they do.
Well, so that's the question then of why do we sleep? We think, Catherine believes it's about cell regeneration. Of course, it's a great pleasure. If you can do it, it's a fantastic pleasure.
Oh, it's a lovely escape.
The moment, well, I saw a quote the other day from somebody describing how real life is not our real life. The real life is when we go to sleep and all the things that are in our life go away and suddenly we adjust ourselves again. Mm. Although, you know, it's harder to talk to people and stuff like that when you're asleep. So Kathy says, and she's right, it's something to do with we need to recharge our batteries, let's call it that. And we do it because the sun goes up and down and we are still animals. So we got that sort of sorted out. You may have a different theory about sleep. You want to tell me how much you hate sleeping, how much you love it? The number again is 0344 499 1000. Don't worry, I've got a million things to say about this sleeping thing. And I hope they'll still be interesting as we go through them. All right, so that's why do we sleep? And of course, you are listening. And in case the show is either A, the talking about sleep is making you drowsy, or B, we're actually so boring that you're falling asleep. I will be doing that to keep you. I'm not doing it straight at the microphone. I can see the engineer getting really worried that that's going to send people in. They'll think it's a fire alarm next door, won't they? And they'll leave the building. All right, so how do we sleep? To quote John Lennon, asking Paul McCartney when the Beatles broke up, that great song, How Do You Sleep, about his conscience.
Yes.
That, I think, is more, that has changed more over the years, hasn't it? Although still the basic bed, sometimes straw, sometimes earth if you live in Japan or somewhere like that. Sometimes the luxury divan, no doubt, is decorating your bedroom as we speak. But still, basically, you take your kit off, you get into the bed, you hope it's warm enough, and you go to sleep. But things are changing. People do shift work, all the rest of it. It is changing, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And some people need blackout curtains and stuff. I don't. I've got very light curtains. And doesn't bother me at all. I think I'm just in a period of my life where I'm always ready to go to sleep. And when I go to sleep, I go deep. You know, it's not a matter of everyone's got to be quiet because I'm in bed. It doesn't matter who is doing what downstairs or even in the same room. I can sleep through anything at this point.
I'm very good at, because I stay up so late, I am really properly tired when the time comes. Mm. So to the very much the annoyance of the person who I share the bed with, who is one of those, bless her, who takes her an hour to go to sleep, reading, tossing, turning, looking at her phone, none of which is helping, I'm pretty sure. Mm. I come in and here's the sound of my head hitting the pillow.
And you're away.
I'm gone. I sleep very lightly. I might get up twice in the night. Might go for a middle-aged wee. Might get woken up by the police cars that rattle past my house. I live on a main road in London with their sirens on. And guys, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. What traffic are you trying to clear the way for? I know your tea is made and you've had the thing saying that, you know, the crumpets are ready and you don't want them to be cold, but you don't need to be having the siren on at 4 o'clock in the morning. And that wakes me up, but I'm very good at sleeping. But then there's part of it, Catherine, where I've taught myself to sleep. I used to be a real warrior. Right. I really was. When I was editor of magazines, things like that, it was terribly difficult at the time. One or two of the magazines I was working on had great deals of problems, commercial problems, personnel problems, and I would lie bolt awake. Half of you listening to my voice will know what I'm talking about now. I'd lie bolt awake with my eyes wide open in the dark, seeing nothing and doing nothing. And gradually I trained myself, and not everyone can, I suppose, and I feel, okay, my sympathy to those of you who are struggling with sleeping, listen to my voice as we broadcast. I just thought to myself, be honest, Danny, this problem you have, whether it's personal or work-related or whatever it is, what can you do about it now in the dark of night?
Yeah.
Who can you ring? Who can you email? What advice can you seek? What can you do about this right now? And the answer was nothing. The answer came back to me, and I'm not a philosopher, but I'm not a stupid man either. It was, Danny, the best thing you can do is get some kip, because tomorrow then you'll be in a position to deal with it. And I've trained myself to think like that, and it's worked. I mean, but that's lucky. That's just luck, isn't it?
But I completely understand that. There have been times in my life when I've had exactly that experience. And that combined with looking at the clock and thinking, and I've got to sort things out in 5 hours, four hours.
Oh, it's dreadful. That countdown is terrible.
But what I taught myself to do, and I couldn't stay in bed, I would get out and I would write a list. Right, this is what needs sorting out. So I knew that in the morning I would address it. And do you know what? Half the time, by the time I got up in the morning, half that list didn't matter nearly as much.
No. I think the words perspective have come in here.
Yeah.
And then there's a weird DNA thing. I had a wonderful conversation. I have a way, if I really can't sleep, if I'm physically struggling to sleep, I do something that doesn't work in the summer, it only works in the winter. So I won't tell you what it is now because it'll come on. I was at home in Ireland. I call it a home. I was at my mother's house in Ireland a few years ago. And she was describing how she was struggling to sleep. And I said, well, what are you going to do about it, Mum? You've got to get some sleep and all the rest. She said, no, I have a way of doing it, she says. What I do is I get out of the bed. I take off. This is an old woman talking. Bear with me. I take off all my clothes, whatever I'm wearing. And I stand at the end of the bed, completely naked, mm-hmm. until I get cold, properly cold. Then I get back under the covers and the warmth of the covers puts you asleep almost instantly. And I let out this noise. Because I've been doing exactly the same thing
really?
For 30 years. Of course I have.
And you thought you'd invented it?
I thought, only me in the whole world. I'm the only one stood absolutely naked as a jaybird at the end of my bed at 3:30 in the morning in the pitch black with my partner snoozing away peacefully, waiting to get cold. No, 350 miles to the west, my mother is doing exactly the same thing. I was so pleased. I didn't really I didn't bond with her over it because the thought of us discussing each other with no clothes on. She's probably seen me with no clothes on. I don't need the rest of that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to talk about some of the things that are happening commercially with sleep, how people are looking to make money out of sleep, and they'll be connected with music as well. Remember, your questions about music, however big, small, serious or stupid, to the music doctor as well on 0344 499 1000. I promise you, it's going to get groovy soon.
Late night conversation, wealth, losing sleep over. Danny Kelly, in for Ian Lee, on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
From the days when this sort of thing passed as world music, the Tokens and the Lion Sleeps Tonight. Go on, guys and girls, do it. Here he goes.
In the jungle, the mighty jungle.
Nothing prepares you for how high he's going to sing this song.
In the jungle, the quiet jungle.
And then they drop him. Covered, of course, by several people, including Brian Eno over the years. The Tokens and the Lion Sleeps Tonight. If you've got a request for a song about sleeping, and you'd be amazed, because I tell you, sleep is the great mystery. That's what we're discussing tonight. Sleep is the great mystery. There are so few songs about sleeping. There are 1 million songs about dreaming, but very few about sleeping. We don't know what it is. We don't know how to do it, and it's a mystery to us. Request the songs, please, by texting 87222 talk, or just go direct to me at Danny Kelly Words on Twitter. We'll take a call on this in a minute, but Catherine, I wanted to expand this out now to say, here's the other thing. Sleep is also, it's a mystery to me and a mystery to you, but we are ordinary people. One of us in the room is a thicko. You know, I'll leave the listeners to judge which one that is. But the other things that we absolutely have to have, food,
mm-hmm.
and let's be fair, some physical comfort. Let's call it cuddling, let's call it sex, call it what you want.
Affection.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Companionship. Call it, but the physical act as well. Those two things that seem to be very important to our well-being as well. We have found ways in the modern world to make them convenient, to make them replace the real food. We've got fast food. You've got restaurants and all the rest of it. in the terms of sex. You know, there are sex toys, there are dating agencies, there's, you know, most people I know now meet online, all mm-hmm. the rest of it. We are making those things easier. We are demystifying the process of eating and getting a partner or getting partners, whatever it is you approach your boat. Sleep, banks of scientists are still stood over it with microscopes going, what? You know what? What I was going to say is, when you ever see an article in the news now about sleep, it's a great mystery and all the rest of it, they've always got some poor sap with loads of wires stuck to his head with what look like corn plasters.
Yes.
See, I don't believe those are real scientific experiments. Those are corn plasters. Don't be trying to kid me. You've got wires and corn plasters. You're going, yes, we're going to make a major breakthrough, a neural pathway breakthrough very soon about sleep. No, you're not. You're going to say some people sleep well, some people don't, and it's very, very important. Mm-hmm. So later on, I'm going to be making some of the comparisons to both food and sex that sleep has elicited. But keep those song requests coming in, because, man, there's very few of them. I mean, like comparison, I say, I could name 100 songs with dream in the title right now, dream or dreaming or dreams. Mm-hmm. And this afternoon when I was putting together a playlist in case the listeners don't step up to the plate, it was very difficult. Let's take a call on this and then we'll move on. So there's other things I want to talk about as well involving sleep. Paul, he phoned in yesterday, he's phoned in today, so I'm going to call him a regularist, indeed a friend of the show. Hello, Paul.
I'm definitely a friend of yours, Danny Kelly.
Thank you. And you're in Stoke Poges, aren't you?
Yes, please announce
which
that
we
again.
Which we know is the non-posh part of the border between Buckinghamshire and Hertfordshire.
Well, it is kind of, there are a lot of big houses in Stoke Poges. I'm glad you've pronounced it Poges right again, yes.
Yeah, yeah. What did you want to say about sleep, Paul?
Okay, first of all, can I just say as a random thought, you just played In the Jungle, The Mighty Jungle, yeah? And you're asking for song requests.
Yeah.
Well, off the top of my head, listening to that, as a song request, could you play? Now, I regard Elton John, yes, as a total music genius, yeah?
Right.
Tiny Dancer.
Okay.
Now think of, just off the top of my head, listening to that In the Jungle, The Mighty Jungle, play the tune as a request, The Circle of Life from The Lion King that Elton John wrote.
Okay, which one do you want? Do you want the Elton John song you requested or The Lion King?
The Elton John song that was written for The Lion King was called The Circle of Life.
Yeah, but what about Tiny Dancer? Where did that suddenly disappear off the radar?
I just gave that as an example that Elton John... But I'm making the example that if you listen to In the Jungle, The Mighty Jungle, and then play the Elton John song, The Circle of Life,
right,
I think you'll find there's a similarity.
Of course there is, and partly it's to do with that sort of attempt to elicit some kind of African vibe in a studio in Maida Vale. Let's be honest, that's part of the problem, isn't it?
Now, just like Paul Simon's album Rhythm of the Saints.
He hired local South American musicians for Rhythm of the Saints. But anyway, talk to me about sleep, Paul.
Okay, right. Yes, I totally lack sleep. I don't sleep properly at all. Catherine might not find that surprising.
Not given your regularity of phoning into late night phone-ins, no, but
I just doze. I live off just dozing, basically, yeah.
And does that bother you?
Yes, it can. It's very frustrating, but I try and find ways around it. I have done for years, but I've always refused to take things like Zopiclone that doctors want to prescribe you. I try and find people say, think of years ago, people say drink a cup of Horlicks or Ovaltine, don't they? Or
yeah, have you tried stripping off and standing at the end of the bed?
Well, I was going to say, I didn't want to say, but Danny Kelly mentioned that, and he put an image in my head. I didn't want to
live with that.
Danny Kelly standing naked at the end of his...
As Courtney Love would say, live through that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Here's another one, then, that's slightly, you know, you can keep your clothes on for, because this is one that my dear departed mother-in-law gave to me. One of the brilliant things that she taught me while she was around, which was a salad sandwich. She said, have a salad sandwich. And I was thinking, oh, yeah, bit of cheese on that. No, she gave me...
Not cheese. Lettuce. That doesn't help you sleep, does it?
It's just the lettuce. Right. Just the greens.
I try eating different things before I go to bed.
Paul,
The thing that seems to be working for me at the moment, eating sesame seed.
Right, well, I don't know about sesame seeds, but I know that lettuce is a soporific.
Is a what?
A soporific.
It makes you
go to sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
well, that's a good Scrabble word, isn't it?
You can have that as well.
So hang on. Tell me about this sesame seeds thing.
I've been eating sesame seed bars, and do you remember sesame snaps? The things...
Of course.
Like, Yeah.
They're sort of toasted sesame seeds, and they're like roof tiles from Lego sets.
Yeah.
But they taste of honey and sesame, yeah?
Yeah. They've been actually helping me, Rich. It's something I've Googled. No, I don't believe everything I read on the internet, but it has been slightly helping.
Okay, well,
it's better than taking a prescribed bloody drug from a doctor, isn't it?
Well, you know what? I know people who have had to turn to sleeping tablets, and it's really helped their life. I think it varies from individual to individual, that. And I'm like you. I would be inclined always to say, really, I have to take this. I had a very, very, very bad experience with Valium when I was young.
Okay, right, you don't need to talk about that to me, because, right, there's the other... Did you look up the guy I said, Alex? I know you've got a busy life. For all I know, you probably were in doing the Alan Brazil breakfast show because it was a Friday.
I wasn't this Friday, but I'm afraid I didn't have time to look up Alexander Wolf today because, well, you're right. I do have an incredibly busy yeah. life. And I, let me guess, let me tell you what I was doing. Oh, yeah, I was sat in my pants watching the IPL.
Okay.
That's the truth. I try not to lie on the radio. That's the truth. I sat in my pants watching the IPL.
There's another image for you, Paul.
Yeah.
There's another image.
It's my house. I'll do what I like.
Exactly.
We had the engineer last night wearing only a lilac posing pouch, dancing around. He's fully dressed there. It's all good. Listen, Paul, I'm going to cut you short because I've got so many things to finish just now. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you very much indeed. Two things out of that. Now, how cruel does Ian allow this show to get about people?
Well, for example.
Okay. He mentioned Elton John there and Tiny Dancer.
Yeah.
Now, we're all pretty fond of Sir Elton, aren't we?
Yeah.
If you don't like the music, there's other things about him. He's a funny bloke.
He's a character.
He loves football. I quite like the fact he has lots and lots of pairs of glasses. I think that was very funny. But I saw him the other day on something, and I think if somebody has a genuine handicap or a disability or a speech impediment, it is obviously ridiculous to be laughing at, and indeed it's illegal in some cases.
Mm.
What about if somebody has taken so much Botox that they can't sing anymore?
Oh. Well.
There was a concert on where he was unveiling a $1 million piano. Yamaha, the musical people, had made a gold piano for Sir Elton, and he was in Switzerland. This thing's only happened in Switzerland. And I'm not going to do the impression because it's too cruel. Suffice to say that he was having real trouble in pronouncing the word of Tiny Dancer.
Oh, what a shame.
I mean, I'm sure he's fine again now, but it must have been just after. He's obviously had some work done because his mouth was frozen.
Mm.
And he was really... Someone take my life tonight. And see, now you're laughing. That's cruel. I think that's cruel.
I know, but there's an
Goodbye,
element...
Goodbye, yellow brick robe.
When someone's done something like that to themselves and it's not, you know, something they're going to have to live with and it's really just out of vanity, I think you are allowed to laugh, aren't
well,
you?
Well, I mean, I like him, Sir, and I also know from one personal case, and I'm not going to say what it was, I know he did a great kindness to someone I know, absolutely unsolicited, so perhaps I shouldn't be doing... I shouldn't be doing that. Secondly, when he said sesame seeds, it sent my mind whizzing back. Do you remember the band The Cocteau Twins?
I've heard of them.
Right, The Cocteau Twins were an indie band in the early 80s. They were very, very deep and meaningful, mostly instrumental music, with a beautiful singer. Well, sorry, her voice was part of the instrumentation.
Mm.
You couldn't understand what she was singing, really. And they were huge with the dark indie kids in the mid-80s. But the problem was they were terribly difficult to interview. They were really... I'm not answering that, no. And they would kind of look out from under their fringe and say, no, don't talk about that.
Were they too cool or were just awkward?
Awkward, too cool, whatever.
Mm.
So the previous person, the great Paul Morley, these days one of our leading cultural critics, had been sent to interview them, and he had lacerated them. He'd absolutely cut them to ribbons. But we have to do them again. And I'm new on the NME and I said, Danny, will you go and interview the Cocteau Twins? It was ludicrous. There were many, many ludicrous things about it. They wouldn't answer questions unless their manager was in the room. Ivo, who ran 4AD Records. They had a whole list of things they wouldn't want to talk about. They were terribly shy, and I'm terribly run bus jess. It was all very difficult. But best of all was that Robin, the male half of the duo, was trying to lose a little bit of weight. He was getting, he thought, too chubby to be a pop star. Couldn't see it himself, but that's what he thought. And what he had decided to do, what he'd been told to do, was some kind of, I guess you'd call it acupuncture, which involved him every 10 minutes... cutting an apple in half, taking a seed, two seeds, one in each hand, and putting the seeds in his ears.
Oh, really?
He's putting the pips of apples, and he's... I'm not making this up.
Someone was having
I was
a laugh,
sober, and I was straight, right, when this was happening. But I noticed during the course of the interview, he must have eaten 200 Jaffa cakes, so the pips in his ears weren't doing any good at all. Which takes us back to sleep again. And I really wanted to talk some more about the fact that Well, here's something else. We're moving on to this now. And I'll come back to other things about it in a second. People are starting to, you know, people make a lot of money out of sleep. In a way, anything that's a human necessity now, well, you know, the sex trade and all the rest of it, the food industry is ludicrous in some ways. I don't know, Catherine, it's designed for you, let's be fair.
Mm-hmm.
That whatever you say about supermarkets, they are gender specific. They're not designed for blokes. All the best goodies are 5 foot six, not 6 foot two off the ground and all the rest of it. What possible joy can there be for when you get to the muesli section? I like muesli, and occasionally I'm sent to the supermarket. I am sent at the point of a sword to the supermarket. That's okay. I'm a willing enough beast. Mm. Off I go. I'll get the muesli. I don't need 40 kinds of muesli. And I counted the other day. Sainsbury's in, other supermarkets are available. Sainsbury's in Islington is a big supermarket. 40 kinds of muesli.
That's too much choice, isn't it?
It's too much choice. I mean, never mind. All right, we all know that people say, what's the worst thing about supermarkets? They'll always say, oh, it's so cold. They're so cold because of the fridges. That's nothing compared to trying to navigate around the choices of, and don't get me started, about the crunchy nut flakes. I mean, how many can it possibly be?
I preferred the Cuban experience. I went to Cuba on my honeymoon. I remember going to the supermarket. And if you want beer, there is beer. One kind.
Yeah.
If you want cereal, there is cereal. One kind. There are no brands, nothing like that. They haven't got the luxury of that.
See, now you're now making a great case for socialism here, aren't you? of a certain kind.
Yeah, but then again, I suppose if you don't like it, you have to lump it, don't you?
Okay. So choice is the issue here, mm-hmm. isn't it? Okay. So among the many people who are therefore, so there's the amount of money that's been made out of choice about food and about sex. There are other real needs. Sleep is also the same. And, of course, there's any number of beds you can buy, and you can buy any kinds of mattresses and sounds that play ocean sounds and all the rest of it to help you go to sleep, and eye masks and things that you... oils,
pillow mists.
Oils that you put on the pillow, exactly. Yes. That. Have you got a pillow mist?
I've been given those in the past, yeah.
Yeah, and all that stuff. And even somebody has started to try and make a few bob out of it in the music industry. If you're not aware of this, and I haven't, I'm going to play this to Catherine because she hasn't heard this before. There's a guy whose name I can't remember. I'll get his name in a minute. But basically, he has a whole series of albums called Rockabye, and what he's done is he's set famous rock tunes as lullabies to get babies to sleep. Mm-hmm. Now he hasn't done just one; he's done dozens of albums of this. You can get whole albums devoted to the Flaming Lips, the Rolling Stones, etc. What are we going to start for? Should we start? Yeah, okay. You're from Manchester.
Yes.
Their greatest ever band is the Smiths.
Of course.
Here is, and this is, there's a whole album of this stuff. Here is this charming man. A punctured bicycle on a hillside, desolate. In his charming car, I would go out tonight, but I'm a 7 months old. What about this?
I'm not sure Morrissey had this in mind.
What about this? Good?
I love it.
Now, that would be a one-off novelty. One song, somebody makes a lullaby version of the Smiths, This Charming Man. No, there's a whole album of Smiths songs with, indeed, a babyfied version of the cover of The Queen Is Dead. My favourite of his is the Flaming Lips album, which the cover of Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robot is replicated. But he's also gone for the superstars. Who among you? I'm just looking out the listeners now. I can see you all, because I can see you all through... obviously, we've wired up your television, so I can see you all out there. Put your hands up if you want to hear the lullaby version of David Bowie's Heroes. 1, 2, 3. Everybody does. Good. I remember the gunshot over our heads and so on. So some people have tried, and we'll get on to Angela in just a second, to make some money out of sleep and the idea of sleep, which we've struggled, I think, quite rightly, to get a proper grab on tonight. The other thing I wanted to say is that the comparison with sleep. Of course, the other thing that's never... We all sleep, yes, Catherine?
Well, yeah.
Right. The other thing is, all we all know what's going to happen to us. We're all going to die. And, of course, that idea of sleep being a small death is stuck in our culture. And I thought, keep this going, please. I thought I'd end this section by reading the last paragraph of one of the greatest books ever written, The Big Sleep by Raymond Chandler. You've all seen the film. You all know what's happening. And, of course, the big sleep is death. At the end of the film, the man they've been looking for, Rusty Regan, is dead. Not Rusty Egan from New Romantic. Rusty Regan is dead. And he leaves the presence of the colonel, the old general, who's dying as well, Sam Spade, and he walks away from a man who has himself seen the blood of this murder that's happened. And this is how the book ends. What did it matter where you lay once you were dead? In a dirty sump or in a marble tower on top of a high hill? You were dead and you were sleeping the big sleep. You were not bothered by things like that. Oil and water were the same as wind and air to you. You just slept the big sleep, not caring about the nastiness of how you died or where you fell. Me, I was part of the nastiness now, far more of a part of it than poor Rusty Egan was, but the old man didn't have to be. He lay quiet in his canopied bed, with his bloodless hands folded on the sheet, waiting. His heart was a brief, uncertain murmur. His thoughts were as grey as ashes, and in a little while, he too, like Rusty Egan, would be sleeping the big sleep.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Danny Kelly, in for Ian Lee, on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Requested this, the Pretenders, and they're rather lovely. I Go to Sleep, one of the few songs about sleep. Keep them coming. You know the numbers, 87222 and the word talk with your request, or tweet me at Danny Kelly Words. Lots of you asking who was doing the lullaby music. His name is Stephen Charles Boone. Stephen with a B, then Charles, then Boone with an E. But his name doesn't appear on a couple of the albums. They don't tend to turn up in the shops, but if you go to Discogs or any one of those searching sites, you'll find he has a massive discography of lullabies of great rock songs done in that particular style. We're talking about sleep tonight, at least for the next 5 minutes. Okay, let's move on to another caller who's come on at 0344 499 1000, joining us here on Late Nights with me, Danny Kelly, and Catherine Boyle. I don't know how she likes. Have you got a title?
No, yeah. Not really.
Can I just call you Kath Boyle? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's
or do you
fine.
Want Catherine?
Well, I am Catherine, really, but everyone calls me Kath.
And what is your rank on the show?
I'm the producer.
Okay, you don't have a phony baloney title like executive producer? Or...
No. Often just refer to me as the woman.
I know that. I know. I find that so wrong on so many levels. You're more than the woman. She's the woman. And let's talk to Angela in Coventry. Hello, Angela. Thanks for ringing.
Hi, Danny.
Thank you for joining us.
And both of you. Are you right?
I'm rocking, Angela, in the free world, which is the only world that I will allow myself to rock in.
That's nice.
Good. What can I do for you, Angela? What do you want to tell us about sleeping?
About sleeping? I can't sleep very well. I used to work nights for 9 years.
Ah.
That'll
do it.
Yeah. Well, I wait now, because you're used to going out to work during the night, aren't you, from 10 till...
Angela, do you mind if I ask you what you were doing, what night your shift you were doing? As a former night worker myself, I'm very interested. What were you doing?
I was a professional care assistant.
Okay, so you were part of the 24-hour service that the health system provides.
Yes.
Did anyone warn you about this? Because I remember when I worked on the railways and I started doing a shift pattern that involved me doing 2 weeks out of five on nights, and my old dad, who... But bless him, he worked on the railways too, and he sat me down and said, son, I want to tell you something about this now. If you do this for more than a year, you'll never get your sleep patterns back. And, of course, he was old, I was young. I didn't believe a word of it. He was right, I was wrong. You've heard that before. But do you get to sleep? Can you sleep during the day? Or can you snatch an hour here and an hour there, Angela?
I didn't have a very good sleep last night because of my knee, so I did go back to bed today. But, yeah, no one really warned me, but work patterns were changing anyway from the 80s, 90s to the year 2000, so I did, but work was actually changing, and the revelation for Italian radio study was over night time, so there was more work available, wasn't there?
And, you know, on occasion, particularly here on my sister station, TalkSport, I have done the night show through the night for them as a favour, because I don't want to be farmed out there. They've got a great show through the night right now, though, with the two mics over there. Not as good as this, but pretty good. And, Angela, I often think that as well as, you know, all the things of having fun and trying to be informative and provocative and entertaining on the radio, the radio that goes through the night, I mean, you could watch television, but you're listening to the radio. Somehow it's more comforting, isn't it?
Yeah, I tend to listen to the radio more because I was brought up with the radio. So I was kind of happy with the radio. I'm not a telly lover, but sometimes I watch the news and listen to the radio at the same time.
Well, if you watched 24-hour news, the rolling news, that is a very good way to put yourself to sleep when they repeat the same story every 20 minutes.
Yeah, they do, don't they? And on Fox, they seem to repeat the same thing.
And if you're struggling to sleep, Angela, do you think it's had an effect on your life?
Yes, it does, because at the end of the day, my doctor told me it would take a good 10 years of getting proper sleep, because after all the shifts I've done.
Yeah, they're saying you need to catch up, aren't they?
Yeah, they're saying I need to catch up, but with my health problems, I don't sleep well anyway, because I didn't sleep yesterday. And but he did say it does take a lot of time out of the body to settle down.
Do you believe you can catch up on sleep? Do you believe that if you are really planning a tiring experience, say you're going to travel somewhere or whatever, you can get lots of sleep in beforehand and that evens out? Because I don't. I really don't.
I agree with you, Catherine. No, you don't. I've done a lot of travelling, like I told you before. I've done a lot of going abroad on my own, and no, you don't get enough sleep till you get back.
Well, I'm not sure I agree, ladies. I've got to be honest, because before I broadcast, if I can, I try and gather myself mentally, and I do that by going for a kip for about 2 hours. I mean, I had 2 hours before I came here. I hope my hair was back in place by the time you saw
perfect.
Me, Catherine. Yeah,
it's perfect.
I thought so, but I think in preparation, I mean, athletes do it too as well, don't they? They come out of their war. They do the warm up, but that's only because most of them have been asleep all afternoon. Particularly boxers.
Yeah.
We've got the big fight tomorrow night, and Klitschko and Anthony Joshua will spend a great deal of tomorrow in bed, deliberately sleeping in preparation for a big effort.
So you think that's? I wonder whether that's to make up for the sleep they've lost while they've been preparing, and then after they've had the fight.
I think boxers sleep for about 15 hours a day anyway.
Yeah.
They work pretty hard, then they go to sleep.
Plus the diet, I guess, is quite starchy and, you know, sleep-inducing.
Oh, I think that's all changed too. There's
really?
an awful lot of protein, very great deal of protein. I think the starch might be at an absolute minimum these days.
Mm.
It's all about getting steak and not raw eggs like in Rocky, but eggs inside yourself. It seems to be a lot of that. Chicken too. Thank you very much indeed, Angela.
Yeah.
And I hope, if it's what you want, I hope you get a load of sleep tonight.
Can I ask you a question? You said you just had 2 hours sleep. You're quite bubbly now, but 2 hours down the line, say about 11 o'clock, you sounded tired last night because I was listening to your voice. That's how I...
No, I've also got the thing that's going around London at the moment. My throat was a bit sore last night.
Yeah.
It's fine today.
And wanted a cup of tea as well.
I want another one now as well, as it goes. Listen, thank you very, very much.
No worries.
Angela, thank you so much for phoning in. Now, listen, you don't have to be talking about sleep. Indeed, we're going to move on to much more, I think, amusing things. I just wanted to get that out there because when Catherine rang me and we talked about this story about people getting 45... minutes sleep in the middle of the day now as part of an exercise regime. I just thought this is all part of this thing that nobody really understands as sleep at all. And I'd like to finish this section. Remember, you can phone us up about anything you want. on, I'll give you that number again. It's 0344 499 1000. In the next hour, we're going to talk about the worst music festival ever, ticket touts, Donald Trump, and we're going to have a happy birthday to another remarkable person from the history of Great Britain. But I thought I'd end this section. Remember, you can phone about any of those things, 0344 499 1000. She noticed my throat was going yesterday. And, of course, if you've got questions about popular music, I am the music doctor, 0344 499 1000. I just want to end this section by saying that sleep also depends on your environment. One of my favourite ever documentaries, Catherine, was on the television. I'm going to say it was a few years ago. It could have been 20 years ago, for all I know. And it was about the people who live in the comically named village of Oh My Arse.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not. Oh My Arse. And that's how it's pronounced, is a tiny village in the middle of Siberia on the Trans-Siberian Highway. The village exists only for people who work on the highway, relaying the road after the frost destroys it every winter. It is the coldest inhabited place on Earth. It is colder than anywhere where the Inuit people live, and it is colder than any whaling station in the Southern Oceans. It is the coldest place on Earth. You can't have a dog there, because if a dog will, of course, lick metal objects, and their tongue will fall off because you can't have a dog. Nobody has a fridge. You just leave your food in the hallway. It's so cold. But for me, the most wonderful thing about it was the little kids at primary school, the 4 and 5 year olds. Playtime, they're pushed out into the playground. They are wearing so many clothes. They're like the Michelin man. And they've got the snorkel parkas pulled clothes with the fur lining around it. So all that you can see is their eyes. The only part of their body exposed to the terrible cold of Oh My Arse is their eyes. And yet, that is enough to exhaust them. Their body's attempt to fight the cold is enough to exhaust them for 15 minutes with just your eyebrows and eyes exposed. After they come back into the class, the documentary was wonderful, it showed the teacher ushering them to the back of the class. Each one on the little desk had a little bed. And they go for a little kip after they come from playing. They're so tired because it's so cold. And that's one of my favourite sleep stories. The little kids with their beds under their desks in Oh My Arse. You're listening to The Late Nights here with me, Danny Kelly, and Catherine is with me as well. We'll get onto other subjects in just a second time. We're very glad to take your calls, texts, emails, song requests and questions for the Music Doctor. You're listening to all of this bewilderingly on Talk Radio.
Danny Kelly in Furry and Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Sleeping with the radio on. Thank you very much for rejoining us for the second hour of three of tonight's edition, if that's the right word, of Late Nights with me, Danny Kelly, Catherine Boyle, the Empress of Radio, the Empress of the Airwaves.
Well, that's more
is
like
with
it.
Us. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, you need a phony baloney rag. Everyone else has got one. And we talked for the last hour about sleep. We'll continue to talk about that in your calls, but I'll talk about anything you want to talk about in the calls. Let me get that number again, 0344 499 1000. Hang on, Dennis. Hang on, Alan. We'll get to you very, very soon. Remember as well that I'm the Music Doctor. If you've got anything you want to talk about, however serious or trivial, about popular music, come on, and I'll chew the fat with you, as I say, and we'll compare chops.
But you won't hear a word, because it just might be the same old line. This isn't easy for me to say,
so,
Diane. I know you don't need anybody's protection. I really wish.
Let's move on now to what I want to talk about next. And of course, it has something to do with music. Many people listening to my voice will have been to a music festival. Some of you will probably have had a terrible time. Some of you will have had a great time. But I can't believe you've been to a festival like the one I'm about to describe to you now. I don't know if it's made the TV news yet, but the newspaper just started to pick up in the last few hours. Catherine and I, when we spoke about the show earlier on, after she got up from her afternoon nap, before I went for my evening nap, that's how it works, we were talking about, well, let me just give you some of the details here. Right now, this is going on in the Bahamas, and there's a clue already, isn't it, in the Bahamas. There's a festival called Fire. F-Y-R-E, and it's a musical festival. And it's been run by the co-organised by the rapper Ja Rule. That's incidental. But the tickets to it, I mean, let's be fair. When I was going to, and we're going to talk a lot about tickets later on in the show, when I was going to festivals 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, the tickets had gone from being very cheap to being, you know, expensive. For a whole weekend at Glastonbury, you can pay 140, 50 quid. I know that's the case. But this festival, the luxury four-person package, is $12,780. Now, it's just incredible. The festival was supposed to be happening on this kind of luxury island where you have access to really... I'm sure they're very famous people, but I don't know who they all are. People who you might want to get your photograph taken for selfies. There was also the bands, mostly unknown to me. Blink-182 are the biggest name that I can see on there. Now, of course, you know, top Green Day impersonators, Blink-182, are quite a big band, but I am not paying 12,000 of your American dollars to go and see their act. I'm just not. Anyway, as you can probably imagine, this has gone terribly, terribly. I'm going to try and temper my language for the radio. It's gone mammaries up, this. It really has. People are now texting, please help me. The luxury part of the 12,000 package, 12 grand package, Catherine, involved you got your own tent, a luxury tent. Some people have tweeted pictures of the tents. They are clearly recycled from a previous effort by the United Nations to house refugees. I mean, therefore, wonderful things in their own right, but not perhaps what you're expecting when you shelled out your $12,000 for the gig. You've been reading it too. It's incredible, isn't
it? Outrageous. I'm just looking at Twitter now. The schadenfreude on Twitter is extraordinary. Oh, there's just lots of swearing about
people. People are so unkind to other people, aren't they?
Yeah, there's a picture here.
They want to laugh at people who paid £12,000 for a disaster.
This picture of a baby sleeping. It says, me broke in my apartment knowing that rich people at Fyre Festival are living Lord of the Flies right now.
Well, look, listen, what we'll do is, because I want to talk about festivals, and because you also brought up the subject of ticket touting and how difficult it is to get tickets. Difficult enough for you as a person who might want to go and see, I don't know, Fleetwood Mac.
Oh God,
it's always
it.
Fleetwood Mac with you, isn't it?
Yeah, I love it.
But soon your girls will be starting to knock on your bedroom door very early in the morning saying, we need to go and see X, Y and Z.
Yeah.
And you'll have the whole thing explained to them, or trying to explain to them, why they can't get tickets. But listen, I want to talk about festivals for the next half an hour, as well as the other things you're going to ring in about. If you've had a brilliant or a terrible experience at a festival. Now, here we've got a brilliant panel for this, because I have been to lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of music festivals, though not typical camper, often been with radio stations or newspapers and had a hotel room. Catherine has never been to a music festival.
Not one, no.
So when you come back from what you've got to do next, which is to do various things around the office, you can ask me 5 or 6 pertinent questions about festivals, and I'll be as honest as I can about the good, the bad and the ugly.
Okay.
Because they're a huge business now, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're extraordinary, the amount of them and the size of them.
And to be honest, when I watch at the highlights of Glastonbury, I can see why people would go. I don't do the camping thing and I can't really understand what would motivate someone
to see. Weren't you a brownie?
Well, that's a whole other story. I was a guide and we went camping once and it was a bad experience. But I'll tell you more later.
But come back. Think while you're off making the dinner for the engineer. Oh, no, he's making his own dinner and you're being the engineer.
I'm holding the fort.
Okay. Yes, indeed. While you're doing that, why don't you think of 6 or 7 things you've always wanted to know about festivals. Right. And I will do my level best to be honest with you.
You're on.
I won't necessarily try and big them up. Let's get some calls on, though, in the meanwhile. What's the point of giving out the number 0344-499-1000 over and over again if we don't take calls? Dennis is up next. He's in Dunstable. Hello, Dennis.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us, Dennis.
Now, you were talking about going to sleep. This is how I go to sleep.
Right. Go on.
The sound of the tide coming in.
Okay. Now, first of all, of course, that through the phone of the microphone of your telephone sounded a bit like white noise. But you're one of those people who uses sound effects to help them sleep, yes?
Yeah, this thing comes on like I've got various sounds in there. You could have summer rain.
Well, what was that? That was the tide, yes?
This is the tide coming in. This tide coming in all the time.
Now, play me another one. Let's have summer rain, then.
Summer rain? Where are we? Just a minute.
Yeah.
I'm going to change it.
Yeah, just no hurry. Okay, that one's a more gentle one. What else have you got? One more?
Yeah.
Now, Dennis, do you play these in headphones or do you play them in the room?
No, in the room.
As ambient noise?
Yeah.
And How much would you say it helps with your sleep? Has it worked?
Heartbeat.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. Great thing. It sends me... I can set it going, and it'll shut down about half an hour. I've gone to sleep long before that.
And it really works for you, yes?
Oh, yes. Well, like a light.
And, but hang on. But did you sleep very well before you found these instruments?
Yeah, I was Royal Navy, so I love the sound of the sea.
Aha.
Uh-huh. Used to rock me to sleep in my hammock.
No. Oh, but the idea of sleeping in a hammock is just... I mean, it sounds very romantic, Dennis. Was it actually not very romantic?
No, it's smashing because the boat moved one way and you moved the other when there was a bad sea.
Dennis, you know what?
You're wrong with the other.
When you mentioned that you were in the Royal Navy, it was the Royal Navy, yes?
Yes.
And when you mentioned that in the pub, I bet people move away from you. But you've come to the right place. I'm obsessed with the military.
Are you?
I'm obsessed with lots of things. Tell me what ships you served on.
Well, I went out on the ocean and came back in triumph. I went out on HMS Ocean.
Brilliant.
Went out to the Far East and I came back in the Triumph. So I said to my wife, I've gone out in the ocean, sweetheart, and I've come back in Triumph.
What kind of vessels were these?
Carriers, aircraft carriers.
Wow, sorry, I should know that, but they're aircraft carriers. And what was your job? What was your gig on the aircraft carriers?
The chief engine room artificer. A chief engine room artificer.
You see, so when sometimes, you know...
You were down on the deck... In front of the boilers and stuff like that. The only trouble is the water level was 14 foot above your head, so, and there was only one thin plate between you and the water.
Yeah, well that's the truth for anybody who works in the engine room of those big ships or is a submarine. Let me ask you another question. These aircraft carriers, obviously they're huge. Did you know everybody on board? Did you all know all the other members of the crew?
No, I knew my own mess. I had a mess of engineers, and so I knew all them. I had a little workshop where people used to come and ask me to do jobs for them, so I got to know a lot of people that way. And then when they put me ashore, I was in charge of machine shops in the Naval Air Station.
So let me ask you another question, and I hope you can help me with this. When you were at sea, you're the engineer, you can make things, you've got a workshop. What's the weirdest thing that anyone asked you to make while you were at sea? Water repair.
Nothing very special.
Oh. Well, that's shut me right down, hasn't it?
When I was ashore, it was easy. I was skimming brake drums out for cars and stuff like that. And it was all the officers, this, and they always come with a packet of fags. So I had plenty of cigarettes. Although I didn't smoke, I saved them for my father-in-law.
Okay.
Naval fags are real buns, but...
And let me ask you one last question about this. How much did you enjoy being a sailor?
Well, put it this way, it hurt when I took that uniform off.
Okay, well, listen, thank you very, very much indeed for sharing, A, your tip for sleeping, and B, some of your experiences of being in the Royal Navy. And, of course, I should have recognised HMS Ocean was an aircraft carrier. I was just going to say some... I'm stumbling over my words here now. I'll come back to that in just a second. Let's take another caller. Alan is on the line in Birmingham. Hello, Alan. Very good. He's fine. Hang on a second, I'll wake him up. I've woken Alan up now, that's good. Hello, Alan.
Sorry, I fell asleep.
Yeah, what, because of the lovely sounds of the ocean there?
No, a bit of a running gag when I called it in, so a few years ago, I was actually asleep for the whole show.
Listen, Alan, yesterday you came on, and I wasn't sure, because I wasn't sure of the rhythm of this show. I'd not done it before. And after 3 or 4 minutes, I said, thank you, Alan, and said goodbye. I got a lot of grief on Twitter, people saying, oh, no, and on text messages, oh, no, you've got to let Alan say more, because he often takes a little bit of a run-up to get to his actual point. They were disappointed that I'd got rid of you.
Well, the point is, everything happened with this show.
And what have you rung up about tonight? Anything in particular?
I have a music question for you.
Oh, try me. Yeah, I'll see if I can help.
You know the song, Do They Know It's Christmas?
Yes.
Who has sung on it the most times?
What do you mean by that? What is the...
Which artist has appeared on the single the most times?
Well, I don't have a clue, but they have remade it 3 or 4 times now. You're going to tell me that somebody's on all versions of it, yes?
On most of them.
Go on, then.
Bono.
Well, I mean, it's a funny old thing, isn't it? The record, you cannot criticise...
He was on the original.
Yeah, of course.
And he was on Band-Aid 20.
Right.
And in Band-Aid 30.
Well, there's a reason for that, though, isn't it? Because if you listen to the original record, and you cannot criticise it, because it raised a ton of money for a fantastically important cause, and that's the end of it. But I actually don't think the record's very good as a piece of music. I think it's somewhere in the general direction of rotten, except for one moment.
The thing
goes along and it goes along. And of course, it's difficult. You've got a load of superstars in the room. It's got to have a catchy beat. It can't be experimental. It's got to be a straightforward pop tune. But that bit, in the original record where he goes, "And tonight, thank God it's them instead of you," where his voice looms out of the whole thing like a galleon, that's an extraordinary thing that he does on that record, isn't it?
He belts it out.
Sorry?
He belts it out.
He belts it out, and I can't help thinking that it was also a huge part of U2 becoming ever more popular, because to use the showbiz jargon, he stole the show there, didn't he?
Bit like Freddie Mercury and Queen doing themselves at Live Aid.
Well, that certainly helped them back into the limelight as well. Are you a particular fan of this particular charity record?
Yeah, I play it every Christmas.
Yeah?
I mean, I tend to play it in September.
Okay, that is taking a good long run up for Christmas, my friend, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you play your Christmas record in September?
Yeah, because I've got it on MP3.
Right. And what else then? What about when you put up your Christmas decorations?
I have a Christmas radio station on.
Sorry, you'll have to explain that to me and the listeners.
No, because one of these other stations we have in the ether.
Yeah.
One of the stations, they play nothing but Christmas tunes.
And you tune into that, do you?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you're a braver man than me, I have to say that. Because, I mean, each to their own with regards to music. But I think when I'm doing a bit of Christmas shopping, usually on the 24th of December, when you're in the local, for me, it's called the Angel Centre. It's not as dramatic as it sounds at all. And you're trying to gather a few Christmas presents. The constant playing of Christmas music in the shops. I plug my ears. I literally plug my ears.
Well, I haven't been fortunate to do last minute shopping on Christmas Eve, because I always have it done beginning of December.
Well, a man who is playing Do They Know It's Christmas in September, of course you've got your shopping done by November, making me look like the mug that I undoubtedly am. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you for that call. Keep those calls coming, please. 0344 499 1000. Now, we're going to come back and talk about festivals when Catherine comes back in a second. But first of all, that reminded me. Look, many of you out there will be very happily married. Many of you will be looking for love on the internet, in the local pub, however one goes about it these days. And many of you will be very happily single. I totally get that as well. But there are some things. I am now very much happily ensconced, but about 12 years ago, I was very much single. I was very much between relationships. And I've got to be honest, I didn't like it. I get lonely sometimes, and I wanted a partner, and I have a very nice partner now. But there are advantages of living on your own, and here is one of them. And Alan, thank you very much, Alan. He reminded me of it. My house in London, the nicest windows are on the first floor. And so I put the Christmas tree in the first floor, decorated it with magnificent amount of festoons and lights, and it's therefore roughly the height of the people in the upper deck of the buses as they go by, because I live on a main road, as I said, and they're getting a great deal of joy. They can see someone's lovely Christmas tree illuminating the living room in that house. That's all right. I enjoyed that. Come the 12th day of Christmas, it looked like a lot of work taking it down. It really did. So all I did was switched it off. Turned off the lights and then closed the door behind me and left it until about the 16th of December the following year. Up I go, up the stairs, into the big room, because I hardly use it, it's like a parlour. Turned on the lights again, there it was again. Now, if you're married, you're not getting away with leaving the
That's
Christmas
outrageous.
Tree. Well, you're not getting away with leaving the Christmas tree up for a whole year, are you?
No.
Somebody, I'm not necessarily saying it's the distaff side, but I suspect it is lazy men and women saying, "And what's happening with that Christmas tree? What? We got loads of room for it." Anyway, I left the Christmas tree up. And you're right, that look on your face, exactly when I first told the current incumbent, the current Mrs. Kelly, when I told her that story, she's made exactly the same head side to side movement that you're making now.
It's outrageous. I mean, it's logical, but it's nuts, I have to say. But I saw in the news last Christmas, there was a woman, I think she was one of the wags, and she decided that rather than do that, which of course is one way around it, she would cling film her Christmas tree and put it away all together. you know, without taking all the festoons
that's
down.
That's pretty good too.
Yeah, that's takes some.
And without playing topping stories, I'll now tell you that when I first moved, we lived in a council basement throughout the early 70s. And then in one of those miracles that happened to a large family, and, you know, and this is social housing at its best, you know, we can all have the general elections out there and people are arguing about the pros and cons of taxation and all the rest of it. But I can only speak from the positive of this. We got a brand new house. There were so many of us kids, we got a brand new house. Ironically, on the exact site where Cathy Come Home had been filled, they knocked down that terrible estate after Ken Loach's Cathy Come Home, mm-hmm. and they built the Popham Street estate. And it's mostly flats, but there were four houses, and we got one of the four houses. And the trouble was, they were nice big houses, and we were delighted with them. The heating was terrible. It was essentially a big air blower in the living room, which was then supposed to go up to the open-plan staircase and through these kind of vents into the other rooms. By the time we got to the top of the house, there was no heating at all. But it barely heated the living room. And that was all right. We got, you know, you do your best. My mother sort of parked herself on top of the heating vent, and the rest of us had to make do. We're not like the children of Oh My Arse. We're not that cold. Oh, no.
No.
But when one day I went round to call for Roy Wannell to play football, because Roy lived two doors down. He was the Humblestones, the Kellys, the Lewises, and the Wannells. No, they weren't called. I'll come back to what they were called. And so I went to get Roy out to play football, and he come to the door, and he's coming. I'm not ready yet. Come in. And I got into their living room. It's just like ours, a normal-sized living room, French windows that I described yesterday, and the open stairs, a lot of air could pass up it.
Yeah.
Roy went upstairs to get his kit. In order to get it, he had to pass through a wall of cling film. They had completely covered one end of their living room with cling film to try and keep the heat in one room in the house. Now, the council did come years later and give us a different kind of heating. But for those early years, and Roy had to go, it's like something out of Star Trek. I mean, I'm seriously, from roof to floor, there was these big sheets of polythene, and he said, excuse me a second, and he, like somebody passing through a rip in a space-time continuum, he gets himself onto the stairs by going through two bits of plastic.
Wow.
Maybe not cling film, thicker than that. Polythene.
Yeah. They used to do it for people, because I remember we didn't have double glaze at one time,
yeah,
and they had a similar thing for that. It was like cling film, but it was tougher, wasn't it? It was
a bit thicker, like sort of the stuff they cover cricket pitch with.
Yeah.
And Roy had to get through a slit in that in order to go upstairs and get his football kit. Listen, sorry, this is going off into another strange place. Keep your calls coming, please, on 03444991000. That number again, 03444991000. When I come back, Kath, who's never been to a festival, is going to ask the festival veteran all about them. And I'm not going to do the usual thing, which everyone says, oh, they're just the greatest thing. Oh, they're just great. I'm going to try and be honest. I'll be positive and negative according to what she asks me. Remember, we're also looking for your requests of songs that are about sleep. And, of course, any questions you want to ask me, like I failed with the last one, about music, then you can ring me, because I am the music doctor. And that number again is 03444991000. You'll listen to Late Nights here on Talk Radio.
Danny Kelly in Furry and Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
This is my favourite.
I love this.
You wander around on your own little cloud when you don't see the why. Disagree.
Song's about sleeping.
Because to reason is not what you care for. I've heard it all a million times before. Take off your coat, my love, and close the door. Don't sleep in the sun, we're darling. Don't stand in the
wonderment that is Petula Clark and her greatest ever record, Don't Sleep in the Subway, as we continue to try and get songs on about sleeping.
Isn't that glorious? That swell.
Well, of course, it's a fantastically clever record. It's Tony Hatch and Jackie Trent, who were, they started out trying to impersonate Bacharach's writing style, which is there in the melody, and then they've obviously gone for Phil Spector as well while they're at it. Let's
and
do them
Beach
both.
Boys.
Yeah. Why don't we have one more verse? I know.
Don't realize that it's all
girl. Thank you very much, whoever requested that. And you can do that to 8722 talk, or tweet me directly at Danny Kelly Words. Now, on Twitter, we were talking earlier on, Catherine, we're coming back to it now, about the Fyre Festival in the Bahamas. Ja Rule is one of the co-organisers. Tickets are $12,000. There's yachts. There's very famous faces, if you like, American reality TV. And the whole thing has gone terribly, terribly wrong. Blink 182, I'm not sure they've turned up. The bands are being changed at a moment's notice. The tents are borrowed from a previous relief effort by the United Nations. And Twitter's on fire with it.
Oh, they're loving it. This one is brilliant from Polly Matthew. It says, United Airlines has created the model for how to destroy a brand overnight. Hashtag Fyre Festival. Hold my beer. And then it says, in brackets, beer not provided. There's also a really lovely one here. It's trying to explain to a rich person, this is from at Internet Hippo, trying to explain to a rich person how this country works for regular people. Okay, so imagine the Fyre Festival, but all the time.
Ah, very good. Very good. And, well, in the studio, we have, I was going to call you a festival virgin, but that brings up too many weird images.
I've not even had a date with a festival.
Somebody who hasn't been to a festival, it's somebody who's made their living going to festivals over the years. Less so now, though I do occasionally still creep up to a day-long one, say in Victoria Park or the middle age answer. I go to folk festivals now to drink beer and listen to people playing the violin.
Do you get to sit down there?
Yes, of course.
Bliss.
Not with my knees. A festival with my knees. You're kidding. So, talk to me. This is your chance, and you represent the listeners here. Yeah. Those who haven't been to festivals, I will try and answer the questions as honestly as I can. Ask me some questions about festivals.
All right. Well, you talked about how you often go as a kind of VIP. You went under press.
Not a VIP, Catherine.
Well, you weren't queuing for
I wasn't slumming. We had to go backstage to go to the toilet,
right.
But I wasn't slumming it with the plebs sometimes.
Because what you
yes.
hear about is the portaloos, isn't it, all
yes.
the time? So what's the roughest you've ever slept at a festival?
What's the roughest I've ever slept at a festival? I can't answer that because I think most of my sleeping has been pretty good. I've managed to get off the site, and it takes hours to get off the site, particularly in the old days at Reading and particularly Glastonbury. But I would eventually get back in some kind of days to the hotel. I can tell you the roughest I've ever slept, full stop, if you'd like.
Go on.
I went out drinking with some chums of mine in a part of London which I'm completely unfamiliar with, Barnes. They lived in a very posh house. I was a student. They were posh students, and they had a very large, rambling building down on Barnes, by the river, in which they lived with Thomas Dolby, the musician. Mm-hmm. Right outside outside the back door was the tree in which Mark Bolan had driven his car and died.
Gosh.
So we're right in the middle of pop culture there, and went out drinking, and we're walking back to their house in Barnes, and I lose them. So now I'm down in Barnes. There's no tube station or anything like that. I'm wandering about a bit. I'm very drunk. In the house. Where do they live? And now it's gone. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. So I decided I'd better go to sleep. I woke up wrapped around one of those double post boxes. You know the double post boxes? A large man wrapped around a double post box. I was obviously thought, that looks big and cuddly.
You're lugging it.
Yeah. And what woke me up? The gentle lapping of the River Thames against my face. I was on the steps there at Barnes,
wow.
where the rowing boats go in and all the rest of it, and it was the gentle lapping of the morning tide that woke up by a tremendous hangover.
The cool, clean water of the River Thames.
No, so I haven't roughed it at festivals.
Right.
If I might say one person who I think did rough it, but it's his own fault, there is a great writer called Simon Reynolds. His book about post-punk pop is one of the great books. Now, he worked for the alternative, he worked for the other, the Rivals. He worked for the Melody Maker. And Simon, he liked to make a show. And I think it was Simon. One day we were at Glastonbury. It was very hot. It was a proper summer Glastonbury. It was roasting. Simon was in full makeup and a fur coat. That was the chosen look for the day. And I remember seeing him keel over and lie. Was it Simon Price? One of the Simons from the Melody Maker. Simon Price will kill me if it's him. I think it was Pricey. Full makeup, that's telling you it's Simon Price.
Yeah.
Still a great writer about pop music, incidentally. And in a fur coat. Gradually, I saw him, he sat on a chair, and gradually he very slowly keeled to one side and fell down onto the floor where people left her. I said, somebody should give Simon a glass of water. Glass of water for Simon. That's where fashion overcame comfort, I think it's fair to say.
Gosh, but he kept that coat on. 10 out of 10 for effort. What's the most essential piece of festival kit that you think?
Do you know, this is a really, really stupid thing to say, but water. Because eventually what happens at all these big festivals, they've got more corporate and more carefully organised. It's amazing how bad you start to feel. Now, I don't drink enough water, and I see people at their desks at work with 2 litres constantly on the go, and I don't drink enough. But I drink enough to get by. Mm. But when you're at these festivals, you're moving about. You're jumping up and down. You're in sometimes in the rain, sometimes in the heat, all the rest of it. And I think people didn't... 25 years ago, people didn't realise you have to keep hydrated. And what happens, there was never enough water on the sites, and then gradually a black market in water would emerge. And people were buying the bottles of water for 60 pence from, you know, the water stall, and suddenly there'd be an alternative water stall 50 yards away with a £2.50. So, I mean, it's a really... I wish I could have a more brilliant answer for that, but I think having the bottle of water in a holster of some kind is definitely the answer.
A water holster?
Oh, yeah, some kind of holster, yeah.
So what's the most disappointing festival act you've had to sit through?
Oh, this is going to sound terrible. This is really going to sound terrible. Ian Dury and the Blockheads.
Oh.
There was a very famously wet, several very wet Glastonbury's. I was at them all. I don't want to sound like a survivor of the Somme, because that old Passchendaele, that wouldn't be right. But they were pretty bad. And I have got myself to the state, Catherine, where you think, I'm now so dirty and covered in mud, that what's the point? And you literally throw yourself to the ground and roll around in it, and you become a mud man. First Glastonbury I ever went to. I'd only just started to work on the music papers, right? Big music writer coming down from London, innit? I'm going to show some of these yokels down here. They're going to put on a pop festival. I'm going to go down here and knock out 3,000 words about the pop festival. I went to Glastonbury and I was wearing electric blue brothel keepers, electric blue suede shoes with thick crepe soles, because I'm big time London music writer coming down to show you people. Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, dear God in heaven. Obviously, they got stuck in the mud the first day. I had to walk back to the town in my feet and buy Wellingtons in a shop in Wells, I think is the lovely town that's near it. No, there was a very muddy Glastonbury. I remember King were on, and they were all the rage at the time. But it was a surprising thing. The people were so wet, tired, miserable and covered in mud, they decided they would throw mud at the acts. Now, I thought the ones that were chicken out would be the Style Council. Paul Weller and his gang jumped on stage completely clad from head to foot in white. They'd obviously gone for white suits for the day, and people hurled mud at them. But to his credit, Paul stood there, Mick Talbot stood there, Steve White sat in his drum kit, and they played their hearts out while a rain of mud and slush of various kinds poured down on them. Ian Dury then followed them. And of course, I love Ian Dury and the Blockheads. Who wouldn't? Anyone who cares about the English language would love that music. But they weren't having it at all. They were not going to have... Now, maybe, you know, they said afterwards that there were stones in the mud as well. But it was most disappointing. I thought, there's a band of hardened musos. Proper. They played in the pub rock scene. They've survived the punk rock thing. Surely they'll just come out and say, I thought there might be some effing and blinding. Stop doing that. No, they just said, no, we're not playing in that. That was very disappointing.
Wow, they just didn't even attempt the job.
I mean, don't get me started about terrible bands, but that's a separate issue, isn't it?
All right, well, I was going to say, you've answered 2 questions there, because you also answered signs of a festival newbie. The blue suede shoes is probably...
That's me, yeah. Wow. That's me.
Here's one. What's the band that most surprised you? You thought they'd be awful and they rocked it.
That's a very interesting question. Let me just try and... I suppose, and this is going to sound a little bit pompous, but I guess the first time I saw a hype, I was preparing to sneer at the hype, Nirvana. They'd made their first LP, Bleach, and those of us in the music business thought, that's all right, it's a little bit generic Seattle. Then there was a single that came out called Sliver. They thought, oh, that's a bit better. And Nevermind came out, and everyone went mad about it. It's a great record. It's an epochal... It's an era-defining record. Mm. And suddenly I was being told that they're the greatest band in the world and all the rest of it. Went to Reading. I was working for Radio 1 at the time. Catherine, myself and Danny Baker went down to Reading. Once again, a lot of, well, we're here now to show you people how about pop music and the rest of it. And it was that strange gig where Kurt Cobain was taken onto stage, wheeled on stage by a man called Jerry Thackeray, the legend as he was called, in a wheelchair. It was all a big gag. There was nothing wrong with him. And they... it's one of those moments when you see a group of young people who are exactly in the place they've always wanted to be. 50, 60, 70,000 people who know their record, and they were blazingly brilliant. They were astonishing. I mean, I was completely familiar. The songs have been, all been hit singles by then, but they played them like they had discovered them out of the air around them and I just had to transmit them to you, and they were amazing. As regards myself and my own best festival appearance, again at Reading, possibly the same year, I don't know, Public Enemy played. I was obsessed with Public Enemy. I'd become, not friends, that's not the right word, acquainted with Chuck D. I'd been to America to do the band. We'd gone like a house on fire because of our mutual love of language and The Clash. Anyway, I'm on the side of the stage for Public Enemy. Sea of Faces, 100,000 people. They were at the peak of their game at the time in the mid-80s. Released the second of their three great albums, blah, blah, blah. And here we are. Suddenly, I couldn't resist it. Now, I suspect from the photographs of me coming off stage that I was not entirely of this planet. My pupils are very large.
Right.
But he has the dance band, Security of the First World. They're supposed to be and they march up and down behind a band. The next thing I know, I don't know why I did it, Catherine. I'm marching back and forth on the stage at Reading. He's looking backwards at me, actually. And there's a great picture of us coming off the stage where he's still looking sideways. I don't even know he knows who I am, but that's that bloke that was on the stage. I'm marching back. I'm waving to the crowd. I'm giving it plenty at Reading. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That is a little snapshot of your life. Yeah. How wonderful.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't all glamour. It's not all glamour, as they say. Go on. One more.
I was going to ask you, when you were talking about Nirvana, I've always been, and I don't know very much about them, but they were kind of around when I was a teenager, and they were a sort of band that I pretended to like more than I actually liked, to be honest. But Dave Grohl seems like such an affable bloke. That dynamic between him and Kurt Cobain, how did that work?
Well, look, I wasn't close to that band. There were people like writers like Keith Cameron who literally knew them very, very well. Yeah. I actually think it's an odd one, isn't it? Because the three of them found that groove that for whatever reason reflected exactly what Dark Kids wanted at that moment.
Yeah.
And you can play Nevermind Now and still realise what a great, great record it is. In some ways, it's formulaic. The slow bits, and he starts screaming and they kick up a row. I think the dynamic I worry about in it is that it's clear that Dave Grohl wants to be a front man.
Yeah.
And he's a tremendous drummer. He really is a fantastic drummer. But suddenly, clearly he wants to play the guitar and do the shouting. look, I've no idea. And look, all the mysteries, one of the great things, I love music and I love bands and I love groups of people who play music together. The mystery, because I can't play a note myself, the mystery of how those people make that thing happen, it's way beyond me. My guess is it was all fine until Kurt, you know, did what he did.
Yeah.
And then Dave Grohl said, well, I'm going to do what I want to do now. And he, you know, the Foo Fighters make the occasional lovely record, but there's been a lot of them now. But people love them. They do love them.
My dad loves the Foo Fighters.
Does he now?
Yeah, he and my sister went to see them, I think, at Milton Keynes and ended up in the mosh pit at the front.
How did they get the tickets?
I think my sister's pretty good at getting tickets because she was a Take That fan.
Oh, so she'd be right at
the... She knows all the procedures.
She knows the sweet spot. One more question about this, then.
Go on, then. Let's have a look. Which one have I got?
You've actually written them down. You are good.
Yeah, which festival took the longest to recover from? And how long?
No question about that. This was another Glastonbury. The previous year, what happens is Glastonbury used to happen on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then we would have to get the paper out, the New Musical Express, with a full review, often 8, 9 pages, 10 pages, whatever it was, by Monday midday. And the previous year, I was assistant editor, I had not been happy with the coverage. I thought it was banal. I thought it was all over the place. I thought our people had gone there, taken lots of mushrooms and hadn't really paid attention. Mm. So I did something monumentally stupid. I did something so stupid. Here we are 30 years later and it's still resonating with me. I said to Alan Lewis, the editor, I said, Alan, don't worry about Glastonbury. I'll write the whole thing.
What?
Yeah. I'm going down to Glastonbury for the weekend. I'm going to get myself into a funny, funny place physically, and I'm going to write the whole thing by midday on Monday. Oh, dear God,
show
Catherine.
How it's done.
Right, so I was mashed off my tree. I was also exhausted after 3 days of being up, speaking of sleeplessness. My great friend Karen Brown, who was then the press officer for Sinead O'Connor and the Waterboys, and the Proclaimers, said to me, how are you going back to London? I said, I've got to get back to London, Karen, I've got to write the whole review. There's about 5 pages set aside for this, thousands of words. So I got in her car and I curled up on the back seat and she drove like a demon through the night back to my flat in Hackney as it was then. This is the days, I have to tell you, I still had a manual typewriter. It was just before we started to work on Apple Macs. And, oh, my God, I sat there in a blur trying to remember that was Saturday. And I wrote this. It was terrible. And it was long. And it was gibberish. And the phone was going every 5 minutes. And it's Alan, the editor, going, or one of the boys from the production desk, when are you bringing this? I said, well, when do you need it by? Well, you know damn well we need it by midday. And now it's 11:10. It's 11:30. Catherine, I went to bed after I delivered my useless copy. And one day I must dig it out and read what the hell I managed to write. I've tried to review every band at Glastonbury on my own. I think I remember going to sleep for about 72 hours after that.
Flipping it.
But that was my longest recovery time, if I'm truthful.
Now, with my producer out, and I've got to say, don't do drugs, kids, as if you're going to pay any attention to us. But,
and they're illegal.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
Are.
So,
I'm not trying to be big or clever. That was the world I moved in then. I wouldn't do it now, because it takes 3 days to recover.
Exactly. Gosh.
Absolutely. And they're illegal. So keep your calls coming. I'd love to hear about your festival memories, if you've got any, or anything else you want to talk about, because that's what Talk Radio is about. This is Late Nights with Danny Kelly, and Catherine is here with me as well. You can ring us once again on 0344-499-1000. We haven't even got round to ticket tells yet. Never mind Donald Trump. But next up here, I'm going to tell you it's the birthday of a remarkable British citizen.
Late night conversation, worth losing sleep over.
Danny Kelly,
in Furry and Lee, on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Oh, you are clever. This is Ed being clever, our engineer, of course. This is the Sidewinder Sleeps Tonight, which in itself pays tribute at the start there to the Tokens, the Lion Sleeps Tonight, which we play at the top of the show. And that's why, with all due respect to Ian, it's these two shows that win all the awards. Don't laugh, I'm serious.
I know you are. Call back, let
it ring some more. This is a good tune, isn't it?
This is one of the first CDs I ever had.
That's interesting, because I'd already gone through this the rock music snob phase. Their first two LPs, where you can't hear what he's singing. I love them. Then I gone right off REM, then this came out and I was back on again. It's almost midnight, so I need to get on the birthday I want to celebrate in just a second. But let's get another caller on. What I say, what is the point of myself and Cat Boyle sitting here roaring out this number, 0344-499-1000, unless we take your calls. Next up, in Bromley, in South London, is Julie. Hello, Julie. Oh, Bromley and
Hi,
Kent.
Dally.
You'd say Bromley and Kent, wouldn't you?
Yeah, if I'm feeling push, I would, yeah.
Lovely to hear you. What, thanks for listening to us. And what do you want to say to me, Kath, and listening millions?
Well, I was phoning up about festivals. I've never been to a festival.
Right.
I've won tickets to festivals, but I've never been able to go for one reason or another. I've either been on holiday or ill or something. Anyway.
You don't want to leave it too late. Sorry?
Well, the thing that puts me off, one of the things that puts me off, is the toilet situation.
Yes.
For ladies.
Yeah.
Because obviously men have their own portable hose.
They have more options, shall we say. Once the bladder comes calling, they have more options, yes.
Julie, have you never heard of a shee-wee?
Well,
oh, those funnels! Give me a break, you two. No, not on my shows. Hang on.
Exactly.
She's mentioned the shee-wees. No way.
Or a long skirt. I hear they're handy.
This very week, okay. My friend does festivals a lot, and for a present, I bought her a shee-wee. It's a bit of a jokey
present. Oh,
now I didn't. This her birthday was like.
Sorry. Again, Drew. What you bought? What?
A shee-wee. Shee-wee alarm for my friend. But her birthday was in September, and we were talking about it this week.
Right.
And she said to me, she's moved to Wales, so I'm not likely to see her for a while. And she said, do you think it works? And I said, I don't know. Shall I try it?
You've got to have a go, yeah. For those gentle souls, what we're talking about here is a kind of funnel that through which the ladies can direct the waste matter. Is that fair?
It's the end like a sort of a cricket box scenario, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like some cuppage and a tube.
Yeah, very, very nice description. It's midnight. I thought I'd gone past this stuff. Go on. So did you try it out?
Yes, I did try it out. And
you can't give it to her.
First
after
of
that,
all,
though.
First of all, where and in what circumstances did you try out the shiwi? Hang on, see the shiwi.
Well, I wasn't sure how successful it would be, so I decided that I would stand in the garden.
Yeah. You stand in the garden of your entirely secluded house over which nobody can see.
Oh, yeah, I don't care about the neighbours.
Okay.
But they've seen worse.
In a secluded part of my garden.
Yeah.
But the problem is that it wasn't that successful.
No.
But in order to put the shiwi in, you have to pretty much undress.
Yeah.
And take your trousers and underwear down anyway.
Yes.
In which case...
You might as well.
You might as well.
Yes.
So I just wanted to let you know that the shiwi is not the answer.
A tremendous update on your own festival problems. And secondly, I never thought I would actually, in the real world, I thought those things had died a long time ago. But there you are, ladies and gentlemen, the latest update on the shiwi.
There's a reason why hippies wore long skirts, isn't there?
Just
easier.
Why don't you go with your friend to the festival, Julie? You sound like a laugh. You might be a laugh at a festival.
I think you would be.
Well, I would be, obviously. But I don't know. It seems like an awful lot of trouble just for...
I know. And do you know, when is the festival season now? I don't tend to go now, except to say to a quiet folk festival, perhaps on Victoria Park in East London for an afternoon. Well, you know when they show all the festivals on the BBC continuously? They're on all the time, aren't they? Or on Sky Art. Myself and my mate Bill, who used to go with me, he's another ex-music writer, works for GQ these days, he comes around my house. We get all the food and drink out, and we do Sofa Fest. We watch all the bands on the big telly.
Best way to do it.
The thing is, Danny, I'm 44, and I'm used to kind of...
Home comforts.
Not slamming it. Yes, home comforts.
Yeah.
And kind of think, I'm not going to do that.
Listen, some beat poet comes up to you at 18 years of age and says, oh, man, I just want to enjoy the world, and I don't care about the length of my hair or where I have to sleep. Tell me that when you're 40, when each one of us loves our own bed and our own kitchen and our own toilet. That's the truth of it, isn't it?
Exactly, that's right.
That was a great call, Julie. Thank you very, very much indeed. Over on Talk Sport, we often have a prize for the caller of the day. They're too mean here on Talk Radio, but in my heart, you're the winner of the prize.
That'll do for me, Danny.
Thank you very much indeed. When do we have to break? How quickly do we have to break? Okay, 3 minutes. I'm going to do it after the break in that case. Okay. We'll take one more call. Let's talk to Gary, who's rung in on his mobile on 0344 499 1000. Gary, you've got to beat that call.
Sorry, Dan, I didn't hear it, to be honest. I was on my way down from the bathroom.
There's a woman describing how she could tried out doing a wee in her garden through a funnel.
Oh! All right.
What do you want to say, Gary? I've only got a couple of minutes for you, I'm afraid.
Okay, Dan, I was just thinking about when you buy a CD, back in the day, I don't buy CDs anymore, on the strength of one song.
Right.
I just want to give you two examples of one where I was absolutely disappointed beyond belief, and another one where I was absolutely flabbergasted.
Oh, I love this. I'm pulling my sleeves up on the radio. Here we go. Go on, then.
They're not big groups. They're obviously smaller groups. And I'm a little bit softer than you, though. It's not rock or anything like that, so I'm a bit softer than you. But the first one was Styx.
Yes. American AOR band, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what I do, Dan. I won't tell you which one is disappointing, which one is brilliant. I'll let you try. But the first one was Styx.
Yeah.
Obviously, the big song was Babe.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, oh, anybody who can sing a song like that must be absolutely...
No, they're not. They're no good at all. They're no good at all.
Well. I like to... Another one, Dan, was Dean Friedman.
Right.
And obviously, his major song was You Can Thank Your Lucky Stars.
Thank Your Lucky Stars by Dean Friedman, yeah.
Right, so I bought that album, and I've never heard anything else by him in my life. I bought that album, and I was absolutely wowed to bits with that. That was one of the best albums I've ever bought in my life.
And that is a joy, buying an album and discovering you've wasted your money, or you've opened your mind and opened your doors of perception. That's a joy lost now to Dark Kids, because, of course, they just download the one track that they want. Unless it's Ed Sheeran, in which case they download the whole damn lot, good, bad, and indifferent, including Galway Girl. his new single, Galway Girl, which is the new benchmark of how bad popular music can be. No disrespect to Ed. Obviously, he's allowed to make a living like everybody else. But it's caused me to change my passport. I will not be associated with Ireland while that record is still available on Spotify. It's scandalous. Absolutely scandalous. Listen, thank you very much indeed for that, Gary. And thank you for having such a good phone line as well. You're listening to we're getting towards the last hour now of Late Night here with me, Danny Kelly. Kath Boyle's also sitting in to help me out. We haven't got through half our subjects yet, and I've still got many more to squeeze in. Remember, you can ring us on 0344 499 1000.
Talk Radio.
Yeah, please give us a ring. Keep listening for the next hour here on Talk Radio to Late Nights, where it's now time for the news and sport headlines.
Danny Kelly in for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
I try an impression of a professional DJ. 2 minutes past midnight here on Talk Radio. These are the Bare Naked Ladies.
Now I lay me down.
I was on Radio 1 for years. I know how to do the introduction to a record.
And that's without the countdown cheat.
Countdown, shmountdown, know the tune.
Exactly.
Just lay back.
Collecting our songs about sleeping. This is Who Needs Sleep. Just to reintroduce myself, I'm Danny Kelly, sitting in. I'm normally in there on Talk Sport, but Kath and the gang have very kindly invited me to sit in while Ian's struggling with his throat. Bless him, hope he gets better very soon. All I've tried to do is talk about things I know about, worry about, care about, or want to celebrate. We've got another hour of this to go. I'm going to tell you about the birthday yesterday now, of course, because I've mistimed this, of a Great Britain. We're going to talk about a woman who's done the same job for 70 years. We've done a lot about music because of the festival, so we'll come back to sexy guitar players. Kath really wants to tell you which guitar players turned her teenage self right on. And we're still going to continue to take any questions you want to give me about the wide, wide world of music. Little detailed questions or something as wide as why don't kids like folk music? Whatever you want to ask, it's 0344 499 1000. We are very grateful to be at some part of your life through the wee small hours of the night.
My hands are locked up tight in fists. My mind is racing, filled with lists. Of
but please don't mention Chiwis. Okay, thank you very much indeed. We'll crack on. We'll take Pablo in just a second, but I want to get the next thing going. Kathy, Kath, one of the things that you do for us when I come in is you've gone through websites and newspapers and things, by no means trying to steer my coil-like mind, but just saying, did you see that?
Yeah.
And of course, something just like a briar caught in your clothing. Your mental briar. You go, oh, that is really interesting. You were telling me the story earlier on about a woman called Karen Bennett. Have you got it in front of you? What did she do?
She was charged with driving without a seatbelt. She decided.
Okay,
she...
so it's not a murder case or anything like that. She's got the powers of the state have come down on her.
Yeah.
And most of us will be quivering in our boots at that stage.
She thought, I'll have these lot.
I love Karen already. She's right up my street.
This is a hairdresser in her 50s from Essex who decided to take on the might of the man, capital M.
Yeah.
And she defended herself in court.
Now,
and she cross-examined the policeman.
Every single person listening to your voice, everyone listening to my voice, will have dreamed at some stage of some injustice has happened or something has happened. Which of us, given all the films that we see in which it happens, which of us doesn't dream of defending yourself in court? But she's done it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the lawyers will say it's a terrible idea and it never works out for people and it shows that you're, you know, maybe a bit narcissistic. But she's done it and she's won.
Karen! She's called Karen Bennett from Essex and she's our hero.
She cross-examined the police officer and proved to the court that he can't have seen her properly from where he was standing.
Which is where it always falls down. The police are always in the pub, aren't they? With all due respect to our boys in blue doing a great job and all that. But when these cases, when they turn up, where they all got the same information in their booklets and someone says, but there was a recent case, wasn't there, where somebody said that they were looking at the back of the two windows of a transit van. And somebody said, but six people can't fit across the width of a transit van. They ought to traipse out of the court. They were making it up in this particular case. She won.
She won. She won. She took them on and she won. And, you know, I think that all of us would take our hats off to that.
Have you ever been on jury duty?
No, I got out of it because I was pregnant.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to do it, but yeah. I said I couldn't guarantee.
Duty, yeah.
I had to disclose that I was pregnant, and mm-hmm. I was close enough to my due date.
Because it could have been a long case.
Exactly.
Yeah?
They said no. We'll let you.
Have you ever been in court for any other reason?
Only as a cub reporter. I used to love it. When I was at journalism college, I did a crime specialism, and I got quite friendly with an old fella who used to work out of the Old Bailey and used to smuggle me into some of the big cases. And it was incredible. I mean, it's a very atmospheric place in the first place, the Old Bailey. And it's a privilege to be there and not be in trouble, to be able to soak it up and enjoy it.
Oh, you're doing this in the big courts in the Bailey, yeah?
Yeah. It was incredible.
Without going into the names, can you remember any dates of any of the cases you saw?
Yeah, I remember one particular case, and it was a Colombian mafiosa. It was a female drug lordess.
She knows how to do this stuff. You see, this is the radio equivalent of plate spinning. She's just running from one carefully arranged plate to another. They look like they might crash to the ground. They never will.
You don't know
that I'm obsessed with the Colombian mafia.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
No, well, obviously the recent series Narcos, but before that, myself and the boy Baker in our Radio 1 days, he's a mass murderer. Pablo Escobar, so let's not get into how good a bloke he is or anything like that. But the things he did, and the fact that he was playing football in his prison and all the rest of it.
Oh, he lived large, didn't he?
And the fact that he put the first aeroplane that he ever smuggled drugs into America with on the gate. I mean, he's a very bad man, a horrible man, caused a country to fall apart. But there is something about the kind of mad pretend Robin Hood thing that I got deeply fascinated with. You're telling me about a mafiosa.
Yeah, she was the leader of this drugs gang, and it was all involving a body in a boot. You know, it was classic
crime
thriller, you know. And obviously, the terrible thing is, you're watching this and you have to keep reminding yourself this is real. Because actually, when you read about people in the newspapers that have done terrible things, you always imagine that you're going to see a monster. I saw a very well-dressed woman who looked like she could be anyone's auntie, you know. It was.
But that's how you get off, isn't it? A lot of it is, I suspect, about appearances. Mm. I've never been in a jury, and I know why. I've been told why. I was the editor of the New Musical Express, which in its day was a slightly, slightly left-wing magazine. Before one of the elections, I think we put Neil Kinnock on the cover. So I have an MI5 file.
Wow.
I could get it. It'd be empty. I'd buy it. I'd get it off on the Freedom of Information. It'd be absolutely empty, wouldn't it? I have lived a blameless life. If anything, I have been, most people would say, I have been a tremendous boon to the community.
Somewhere there's a very bored MI5 operative, is what you're saying.
He's got this file, and he's going, let's have a look at this fellow again, Daniel John Kelly. Let's have a look at this. Own the Sports Tottenham. Got a lot of records. No, not criminal records, just actual vinyl, yeah. He did play a siren very loudly on the radio the other day.
Put it down. You've got to have
joke
something.
Because with the office has come the idea that you're some kind of mad lefty. So I think that's the reason why I've got to these advanced and very wise years without ever being asked to do my civic duty. I would do it. Of course, you have to do it. I believe in the jury system. Absolutely. Compared to judges, at least 12 ordinary people. Did you watch the OJ? You don't watch television, do you?
No, but I did see the OJ thing.
Now, there are two OJ things. Did you see the documentary?
Yes.
Did you see the drama with Cuba Gooding and John Travolta? I'm asking the question, how good was that? I mean, really, how good was it? That's how good it was. It was magnificent. From John Travolta's massive eyebrows down, every part of it was brilliant, wasn't it?
I did laugh a little bit at the Kim Kardashian references because had to bring him in, even though those girls had absolutely nothing to do with it.
No, but it was brilliant, wasn't it? And of course,
well
the documentary,
done.
Which won the Oscar, was simply astonishing.
Gripping. I mean, how many hours was that? And I didn't...
9 hours
I didn't
of
breathe properly through the whole thing.
No. If the glove don't fit, you must acquit and all the rest of it. Just extraordinary. Let's take another call, because obviously all plans have gone to hell here. I wanted to talk... Karen Bennett, the woman who defended herself, she did so because she liked detective series
on
television.
She'd seen Miss Marple.
And she was a Miss Marple fan. I want to talk to Kath about detectives, because I'm obsessed with Sherlock Holmes in particular, but I like a lot of detective TV. I never liked any of it until I met the current Mrs. K, and then she suddenly turned me on to things like Lewis and stuff like that. She said, they're called cozies, Danny. So instead of playing Black Sabbath all evening, you can give yourself a 10-minute break, sit down, let something just wash over you. And she was exactly right. They're called cozies, apparently. Mm-hmm. Those programmes when you don't really care who did the murder. You just want the programme to unfold nicely over 2 hours.
And you like the detective.
With some lovely buildings in the background.
Yes.
And so indeed, I was not playing King Crimson all night. Instead, I went and watched the television. She's absolutely right. Let's talk to Pablo. Oh, what a coincidence that is. Pablo's in the United Kingdom. Hello, Pablo.
How do?
Thank you very much indeed. Are you of Spanish extraction?
No, it's merely a pseudonym.
Oh, you. I see. Are you a spy?
Well, if I was to say that, then I would be, potentially put myself at freedom of. Well,
I mean, if Ian was here, he'd ask you straight out. Well, why are you using a pseudonym then?
It's not a pseudonym. It's just a name that I'm known by. And
okay.
I've known by for many years, but it may or may not be my given name.
Okay. Well. Okay. I'm going to have to take that at face value. What did you want to say, Pablo?
Just in regards to songs about sleeping.
Yeah.
You may have already had this, but not potentially the version. But I go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But not the Pretenders version, the Kinks version.
Well, of course, it is one of many Kinks songs that the Pretenders have covered over the years. We have just played, about an hour and a half ago, we did indeed play the Pretenders version of I Go to Sleep. But you're right, and Ray Davies is one of the very few writers of Ray Davies or the Kinks who's tried. There's several Kinks songs about going to sleep. Some of them have sleep in the title, some of them are just about sleeping during the day and all the rest of it. Mm. He has tried very hard to get, you'll bring us back to the opening salvos of the show now, he has tried very hard to get a grip on something that everybody does and nobody understands, which was my opening gambit, and what seems like a million years ago for the listeners now, on the show. Sure. I mean, the show is essentially, Pablo, the show has consisted of two things. Me trying desperately to talk brainily about sleep and letting off a siren every sort of 5 minutes. I mean, that has to pass for entertainment here. What did you want to say about the Kinks song? You think it's a better version, yeah?
Well, personally, yeah. I think it's got a very kind of ethereal feel to it.
Well, and you're absolutely right, because it's almost itself a song that it's trying to, I think it's trying, Catherine, I think it's trying to replicate the experience of dropping off to sleep in the form of a song. I mean, it's pretty ambitious stuff, but then Ray Davies never shied away from that. I'll tell you what, Pablo, we'll try and get that on for you in the next few minutes. Let me ask you a question, Pablo. Are you a person who struggles with sleep yourself?
I've been in insomnia for many years, but I find having work and two kids generally knocks me out more often than not.
Well, that suggests then that you just weren't tired enough.
Well, I think I just had excess energy that I couldn't burn up in a normal day of being a teenager, 20-something.
Yeah.
Et cetera. And now I think the energy levels are depleted, but the workload has increased. So I've kind of plateaued quite a bit.
Now, of course, you've come on, asked to hear a particular piece of music. If we were a television programme, this would take about 4 weeks and perhaps 300 people to make it happen. The beauty of live radio, and it is the most beautiful thing on earth that doesn't have a pulse, is that here it is. Thank you, Pablo.
When I look up from my pillow, I dream you are there.
I actually think we may have found Ray Davies' later version of it, but it's equally good.
I go to sleep, sleep, and imagine that you're there with me. I go to sleep, sleep.
It's good, isn't it?
And imagine
very nice.
That you're there with me.
Of course, he is one of our absolutely greatest songwriters, Ray Davies, and I hope he's not listening now. One of the most difficult men you could ever come across. I'd like to tell you, to hail fellow, well met, and all the rest of it, nah. Ray is a difficult, difficult cove, and he makes no concession whatsoever to your feelings when you meet him about this, that, or anything. Do you know what, though? When you listen to Waterloo Sunset, I know I shouldn't say this, he's totally forgiven, isn't he? He's totally forgiven.
Sleep. And imagine that you're there with me. I go to sleep.
Do you remember I started yesterday's programme by saying it is a mug's game and impossible to predict the future?
With me.
And every day something happens that makes me convinced that I'm right about that. And that's for all those people who are set up as people predicting the stock markets, prognosticators, Nostradamuses of every kind. They're all charlatans. The example I'd give comes, you know, right out of what we started to talk about yesterday. Do you remember the very first thing we talked about? I've forgotten now already. I forget. Come back. That's what we were talking about. I'll come back to. I know what it is because we were talking about. When I was growing up, there were lots and lots of American detective series on the television, right? Indeed, if you think about the clashes, I'm So Bored with the USA, they opens the line, Yankee detectives, they're always on the TV. Elvis Costello could write Watching the Detectives about the... And I thought, if you then you think you can never have, there can't be more detectives, there cannot be more crime procedurals, there cannot be more shows about people tracking down crooks on the television. How wrong we were, how wrong I was, how wrong they were. Because now, and I know you're not the TV fan of all time, and our friend Karen Bennett, who defended herself in court and won, she did so on Miss Marple, but I really can't get to grips with how much police procedural, detectives in particular, are on the TV at the moment. Yeah.
There is a fascination, isn't there, with, I suppose it's because it's the side of life that you're kind of frightened about, but you hope you never get involved with, but it's fascinating, and you want to see them win, you want to see justice prevail.
I mean, there is something about it, there's one thing I really don't like, there's some of the very, very big series, the recent Broadchurch didn't do it. I don't think you saw it, but
Broadchurch, I didn't see it.
But it was extraordinarily popular, and particularly among the Twitterati, it was all over the place. Actually, it was really, really good until the last episode, which was really, really bad. I'd watched the first series, part of our "Let's sit on the sofa and not listen to King Crimson all night" policy, and it was really good. I'd watched the second series; it was really bad. And then she said, "Let's give the third series a try," and it was terrific until the end. It was too trite. But it wasn't about a murder. And one of the things that really bothers me, Kath, and sorry, I'm looking at you, the parent here, is that so many of the big TV series start off with a gruesome, grisly murder, and nearly always of a woman. And then you have the setup, because, of course, they have to, the way it's written now, you have to have 20 suspects who you couldn't possibly tell who it was. And, of course, that means every man in the series is a suspect. They're all freaks of one kind or another. I don't like the fact that a woman has to be killed to make the drama work, and I don't like the fact that every man in the series is taken as a potential murderer. I don't think it's a healthy thing, and it happens a lot in these series. That's just something I'm throwing in there.
No, you're right, you're right. And I've read about that before, the fact that it does take a female to be killed to get people engaged. Isn't that strange?
It's really horrible, yes. It seems... I mean, it's happened as well over the last 20 years in the really big blockbuster male films. Unforgiven. The one with the Freedom and all that business, whatever that's called. What's it called? A Scottish film.
Oh, Braveheart.
Yeah, of course, Braveheart. One must have man not drunk enough water. But there's a whole series of them.
Yeah.
And they all start with the violation or murder of some woman, which then justifies every male action after that. Now, this may be a bit heavy for 12:18 in the morning, but I don't like it. There must be a better way to write these things.
Yeah. Oh, I tell you what, we were talking about how I don't watch very much television, and I often find that series...
And I'm forcing you to pretend that you do.
No, but I'm not going to pretend, but there are some series that have caught my imagination. There are some in the past when I used to be able to watch more television, I find... For example, Silent Witness.
Mm-hmm.
I would watch that every week, and every week at the end I go, oh, really? Really? I can't believe I've sat through that again. It's just lame balls, quite frankly.
Yeah.
You know, and her hair is too nice to be cutting up dead bodies. Her clothes are too fancy.
Well, why were you so fascinated with them?
I guess it was one of those things that it was on and I'd been watching it for a while and you just get into the habit of watching it. But it got more and more ridiculous to me. She was trampling all over procedure. She was getting involved with people involved in the case.
She was trampling over procedure?
Yes!
I'm going to call the cops.
So outright. At one point she had one of the witnesses sleeping on her sofa. You can't do that. Or she was investigating the death of someone she knew. That's not allowed to happen.
I once said, I mean, I never saw it, but the way you talk about it, was it Amanda Donahue, something like that? Who was it?
No, this time around it's Amelia Fox.
Yeah. At some stage she started cutting herself. See what's happened to her.
Oh, exactly. Investigate herself. It's ridiculous. But I did see one series that was brilliant, and it was great because it was a limited series. They weren't trying to spin it out.
And that's the other big problem. They always think halfway through the first series, can we get away with two more series?
Yeah.
Hello, Broadchurch.
There was one called Top of the Lake, and it was extraordinary, and it had Elizabeth Moss in it.
Now, did that start off with a bunch of people driving down to a big lake and meeting a bunch of sort of hippie survivalists?
Yes.
Turned off after that.
Honestly.
I made a mistake, did I?
Yeah, honestly, it was wonderful. And it kept you gripped and kept you... You know, sometimes you think you can see the denouement from three episodes away. No. Right to the last 5 minutes. In the last 5 minutes, you are staggered. It was amazing. I've got it on DVD. I mean, I'd never buy series on DVD. I will watch that again. It was amazing.
Okay, well, my current favourite, just so we'll round this off, I'm obsessed with Sherlock Holmes. I love Sherlock Holmes. I love all the incarnations of him. I like the bad incarnations of him as much as the good incarnations of him. I like the fact they've made a film about him when he was young. I like the recent Ian McKellen film where he's very old. But currently, therefore, people think I'm going to talk about Cumberbatch and all that. Yeah, clever television. Mark Gatiss is a very brilliant man. Man. That's not the one. It's the American one, currently called Elementary, mm-hmm. With Lucy Liu as Watson. There's the twist. Watson is a woman. And, of course, Johnny Lee Miller as Sherlock Holmes. They've done over 100 of them now. I've got one waiting for me to go and watch when I go home and I finish this show. They're actually now a little bit samey and a little bit boring, but I don't care because Johnny Lee Miller is just... yesterday I revealed to you that I have no respect for actors by a handful. He is so brilliant. He's now taken the eccentricities of an English detective to extraordinary lengths. The scripts now are incredibly difficult to follow because the mysteries are so stupidly complex. And he and Lucy Liu, all it is their relationship and his strutting around in the studio and the lovely brownstone in which he lives and putting his hands on his hips in the modern... He's a very fit man. He runs marathons, doesn't he? But even then, he cannot get clothes to fit him. His clothes are always two sizes too small. The buttons are going to burst on Johnny Lee Miller's clothes. He is so good. It's like... For me, if I had a long day, our friend listening earlier on to the noises of the sea, mm-hmm. I can go and watch Johnny Lee Miller pretending to be Sherlock Holmes for every bit of, it takes about 45 minutes, and you can feel yourself going, and the stays in your corset are all gone, and you are free. Free, my friends, free.
Late night conversation, wealth, losing sleep over. Danny Kelly, in Furry and Lee, on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Earlier on, I made the point that the sleep is sometimes associated with death. This is one of the great 50s death records, Jody Reynolds. And the endless sleep.
Traced her footsteps down to the shore. Phrase, she's gone forevermore. I looked at the sea and it seemed the same. I took your baby from you away. I heard a voice crying in the deep. Come join me, baby, in my endless sleep.
This is the stuff for a late night radio station.
Why did we quarrel? Why did we fight? Why did I leave her alone tonight? That's why her footsteps ran into the sea. That's why my bed has gone from me. I looked at the sea and it seemed to say, I took your baby from you away. I heard a voice crying in the deep. Come join me, baby, in my endless sleep.
Yeah, Jody Reynolds there and The Endless Sleep. Those records, when they were coming out, the Shangri-Las, Leader of the Pack, and others, they were thought to be really revolutionary at the time. People used to write about love and sunshine. To write about your loved one dying was thought to be absolutely extraordinary. And let's be fair, it sounds a bit simple now, but it's a great record.
Reach for my darling, held her to me. Stole her away from the angry sea.
Now listen, of course, I should have done this before midnight because, as I said, each night that I do this show to help Ian out, get his throat back into some kind of order, I wanted to do a birthday of some extraordinary Briton. Yesterday we did two, and we did Archibald Leach, who designed all the football stadiums that you grew up with in all over this country, Scotland, England, etc. And we also did Mary Wollstonecraft, grandmother of British feminism and mother of the woman who was Mary Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein. I'm going to tell you about an amazing person as well. I should have done it before midnight because it's no longer his birthday. Those of you who know about Walter Tull can switch off for a few minutes. Walter Daniel John Tull, was born on the 27th of April 1888, and he died, and the date is significant, on the 25th of March in 1918. And Walter Tull is one of those people who will resound down through history because of accidents and because he was an amazing man. First and foremost, he was one of the very first people of colour. He was mixed race, a very black-looking mixed race man, but he was of mixed race, to play professional football. He played for Tottenham and then more famously for Northampton Town. Along with Arthur Walton of Sheffield United and Billy Clark of Aston Villa, he was the first person of colour to grace the football pitches of this country. And he was a good player, and he was a very good player. Then the war broke out and Walter Tull joined the forces, like people do. He served in the Footballers' Battalion of the Middlesex Regiment. Do you know about the Footballers' Battalions?
No, I didn't.
Such was, obviously, you know about the Pals' Battalions. The First World War, part of the real pain that it caused was you'd have these terrible days of carnage on the Western Front. And because what we did was put all the boys and men from one town or village together, they were pals. The Accrington Pals from up near where you come mm-hmm. from were famously, you know, one. But it meant everybody in a village would get wiped out in a day. And we don't do that anymore. But they also put trades together. So you'd have engineering battalions who were all engineers by trade. And one of the most famous was the Footballers' Battalions, where they got the professional footballers and put them all together in one battalion to go and fight on the Western Front. You're in the Indian Tears now.
Yeah.
The most famous example of this was the Leyton Orient team, who in 1914 played a match at home. There was the patriotic appeal for people to go and join the Western Front. And the Orient team formed up in two ranks of six, marched off the pitch in their kit straight to the recruiting office and joined up en masse.
Gosh.
There's an amazing book about that. The name which is she's currently gone out of my normally steel trap of a mind about the Leyton Orient footballers who fought in the First World War. Well, Walter Tull joined the Footballers' Battalion of the Middlesex Regiment and fought on the Battle of the Somme in 1916. And if you go to the Somme, as I went a couple of years ago, there's a lovely monument to the fallen footballers of the First World War, which is absolutely beautiful if you're British, because there are scarves from about nearly every club in Britain just hung over. It's only the size of a small cupboard, the little memorial. It's completely covered in football scarves. People come and put their club scarves on the memorial.
This would have been before football was a glamour game, wasn't it? These were...
Yeah, football was still very much a working class game. It had been established before the First World War as a professional game by Scottish professionals moving down to the northwest, mm-hmm. Which, again, you grew up in what was the heartland of football. I wonder whether it's gradually drifting towards London, but that's another story for another time. They were ordinary working class blokes who and went off to fight. Walter Tull, then, having already been one of the very first black footballers, becomes the very first black officer to lead men into battle. He becomes, I'll get his rank in a second. He fought at the Battle of the Somme in 1916. Then he was commissioned as a second lieutenant on May 30th, 1917. He went to Italy and fought there for the last 2 years of the war, mentioned in dispatches for gallantry and coolness while leading his company of 26 men on a raiding party into enemy territory. I'm reading from the citation here. And he was, as I say, the first black army officer in the British Army to lead troops in battle. He went back to France in 1918, and in the last knockings of the war, he was killed during the spring offensive of 1918. Walter Tull's body, which had seen the football fields and the fields of Flanders, was never recovered. But he is a legend. And I think, again, a bit like some of the people I talked about yesterday, as the years go by, more and more people become interested in him. I know there's a campaign currently to put a statue up to him outside of Northampton's ground right now. And I know there's a lot of talk about him being more widely recognised by Parliament, indeed. Because, let's be fair, he has squeezed into a very short life a great amount of distinction, and that's who I wanted to talk about tonight, just for those few minutes. What I said I would do a birthday every night. I missed it, of course, because we were so busy talking about Shiwis. But if you want to, it's on Wikipedia, but there's also a brilliant site devoted to him these days. I think it might be run by the government, but if you just put in Walter Tull's name, you'll see his kindly face in an army hat and then a picture of him running out on a football pitch. And that's whose birthday I wanted to recognise today. Let's get another caller on, because as I keep saying, what is the point of the number 0344 499 1000? Let's talk to people. Western Supermare is the venue. Barry is the man. Hello, Barry.
Hello, Danny. How's things, mate?
Really, really good. I've only done this for 2 days. And thanks to Catherine sitting in here with me, I've both made a reasonable fist of it. I know that. But also, I've really enjoyed myself. Even when I'm doing serious things, I've really enjoyed myself. Thank you for asking. What can I do for you, Barry?
Yeah, I've enjoyed the last couple of nights, Danny.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, I'm just in relation to Jodie Reynolds and Endless Sleep.
Ah.
It just took me back to my period. I'm sort of 73.
Bless you, my son.
Thank you. It took me back to my period, 58, 59. And it reminded me of Marty Wilde, who covered Jodie Reynolds' Endless Sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought...
Yes, Jodie was the original, but the hit in this country was Marty Wilde, father, of course, of Kim.
That's right. And I thought he made a good fist of it, to be honest. And it leads me on to the fact that around that period, it lasted about 2 years, that sort of rock and roll-y period, and he covered Donna, which was Richie Valens. He covered Teenager in Love, which was Dion and the Belmonts. And you had an awful lot of that going on, didn't you, during that little spell?
Well, what happened, what happens now, of course, is that the records get released all around the world. You're talking about a period in the late 50s where the big American hits didn't get necessarily released in this country. Unless one of the record companies like London American picked them up, they didn't get released. And so people who knew music would say, well, that's a great song. Why don't we get Marty Wilde? Why don't we get Cliff Richard? Why don't we get Billy Fury to cover it?
Yeah, that's right. And the other one that came to mind is that sometimes I actually recorded and they both sort of battled it out. I'm thinking about Tommy Steele singing the blues.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just saying the American that recorded it. He had quite a big hit with it, Tommy Steele. Guy Mitchell
did the American original. Tommy Steele did it then. Dave Edmonds then had a hit with it later on in the 70s. And the Clash's London Calling, the coda of the Clash's London Calling, ends with Joe Strummer going, I never felt a more alike. He's actually starting to sing, yeah. Singing the blues, isn't he?
Yeah. Anyway, Danny, that's about it. But, you know,
Barry, that was a load of stuff. Thank you very, very much indeed for just coming on and shining another light into a corner of our lives that we hadn't been there before.
And can I respect your knowledge on music, mate?
Look, I'm just showing off, really. It's just showing off, isn't it? Just showing off. Thank you very, very much indeed. That was lovely. He said that I'd forgotten that a song as famous as London Calling, in its very last knockings, the coda is over, and Joe Strummer quotes singing the blues. Guy Mitchell, Tommy Steele, etc. He quotes it exactly there. We were talking about Walter Tull and about the first one. Just to say, I don't want to be a downer, because we're going to talk more about guitars and sex in a minute, but I don't want to be a downer, but it is easy in a world where we've become very, very familiar with the images of the First World War, and where we seem to be, with all due respect, we seem to be having a commemoration every 10 minutes about these things, and you may have your own views about militarism and what happened. Perhaps even the futility of that war. I don't happen to think it was futile, but you might think it was. But I have to say, when I went to the battlefields, Catherine, it was astonishing. How can I explain this? Around the Somme, we're all familiar with the massive, massive graveyards, Tynecot and all the rest of them, in which thousands of Allied troops are buried. What's amazing are two things beyond that. There are tiny little graveyards as well, dotted about. People tend to be buried sometimes where they fell. Oh. And if you have the right guide with you, and I did have a lovely guide, you go to these places and it's just spookily beautiful that they're kept up by the Commonwealth War Graves Commission, but also the things they tear your heart apart. I was stood in one of the little tiny ones, and there were two rows of about 12 of the identical headstones, and they were all there. And over there, there were two others, but they were separate, next to each other, separate. I said to the guy, what's happened here? And he said to me, those are infantrymen and those two are gunners, and they buried the artillerymen to be with their own.
Oh.
And it something about that really struck me, you know. Wouldn't they want to be with all the others, you know? The other thing that's say something.
No, I just wonder whether they were expecting more. So they were, you know.
No, these things are, there are thousands of them dotted around the landscape, which I'm coming onto the dark side of this in a second. The second thing that's amazing, of course, is that the little villages, the village I stayed in, they are exactly as they were in 1914. Because, of course, they were all pulverised to brick dust by the artillery, by the fighting, and they were rebuilt after the war exactly as they was. And people have taken great pride in maintaining them. I mean, the satellite dishes. But it's very spooky, because when you're driving around, you drive through these villages and you think, if there wasn't cars here, if there were horse and carts, we're back to a France before the war began.
Yes.
And it's pretty amazing. But the story I wanted to tell you, and those of you who have trouble sleeping, this won't help. Of course, I'm wandering around, and eventually we go to Langemark, which is the big German cemetery. Now, Langemark is a very different place from the British cemeteries. For a start, where we have the rows and rows of white crosses, they have little black slabs on the ground. And the German soldiers are buried two by two. And each slab commemorates two German soldiers. I don't know what comradeship they're trying to reflect in that, but they are buried two by two. Langemark is very dark. It has a big, dark entrance, great big black metal gates. and trees that overhang every part of it, so it's dark even in summer. I also know that Adolf Hitler, to mention him for the second time in two nights, that when they overran France, that as well as Paris, that's the other place he wanted to go to see his fallen colleagues from the First World War in Langemark. So we're in Langemark, and we're stood on in one of the places, and the guy said to me, and of course, you're stood on top of a mass burial pit here. There's about 25,000 German troops buried beneath your feet. All the names are picked out in a tiny, tiny writing on a thing around it. And eventually I plucked up enough courage. I know enough about the world to say, but hang on, this is the only German cemetery, and you say there's 25, so let's say there's 30,000 people buried here. But they lost 10, 20 times that many on the Western Front. Where are the other graveyards? And he said, OK, this is a question not often asked, and I'll give you the truthful answer. After the First World War, the German dead were buried with every bit as much ceremony and care as the British dead, and there were hundreds of little German cemeteries all over the landscape in that part of France, and big cemeteries as well. And people paid great respect. That's the way it was. When the Germans came back 20 years later, in 1939, when they were driven out again in 1944, people were having enough of it. The farmers on whose land the German cemeteries were ploughed them up, bulldozed the bones into the roads and left the government and the councils to look after it. And the German bones were taken off to mass ossuaries, some of them now anonymous and unknown, and like the one I was stood on with 30,000 people beneath my feet. He said the second time the Belgians said, no, enough of this, and the French people. In Belgium, particularly around Ypres this was, they just said no, and they dug up the graveyards and threw the bones out into the roads. It's 12:41 on what is normally a very light-hearted radio station, and you've just heard about the Belgian farmers throwing the bones of the German soldiers into the road.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Danny Kelly. In Furry and Lee. On Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Sing me to sleep. Sing me to sleep. I'm tired and I want to go to bed. Sing me to sleep. Sing me to sleep.
See what we did here. Started the show with a lullaby version of the Smiths' This Charming Man. We're heading towards the end with the Smiths' beautiful Asleep.
Cause I will be gone. Don't feel bad for me. I want you to know.
Thank you for everyone who's contributed to the musical homework tonight. We're going to end the show, I think, but on a lighter note than me describing the terrible fate of the German bones on the First World War battlefields. Catherine, I know you've talked about it before on the show, but you haven't had me to tell me about it. And for some reason, another piece of research. Now, of course, how research gets financed and what they're trying to actually discover is always a sort of a hilarity, isn't it?
Yeah.
But another piece of research into is the sky is blue. Is the sky blue? Do bears defecate in the woods? And what religion is the Pope? Is why do girls like musicians? What's been... You've got it there in the paper.
This isn't even that. It's which members of the band get the most attention.
Oh, it's given that, that being in a band is...
So,
yeah.
So Kel Surprise, it's the guitarist. And of course it is. And I know
why have they done this research?
Let's have a look. Because hang on, let's have a look. I can't remember.
Okay, well, then you've got plenty of time. I'll just talk through this for a little while.
Hang on, here we go.
You have plenty of time. I will just address the nation through this megaphone. You've got it now, have you?
It's an online dating site.
Okay, fantastic. Fire away, then.
So if you're planning to go online dating, learn to play the guitar first, and you'll be
I'll go back to an interview with Pete Townsend in the mid-60s when the Who were doing their thing. He was asked, so what are you? Do you want to be a poet? Do you want to be... a voice of a generation. Why are you doing this loud rock and roll music? And he said, because nobody with a nose this big is going to get girls otherwise. And he was kind of laying the whole thing down there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What's all right, you help me. I love bands, but I have no... And I love that, particularly, you know, when it's an all-male band, I can understand the energy that boys can get together for about 6 months and then it all goes crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that. We saw it last year at Leicester City's football club. Exactly the same energy as bands when they hit their sweet spot. What we're getting, but I'm missing out on something here because I don't sit there enjoying the music, I'm sure women are, thinking, wow, they're great, aren't they? But I'm missing out on something. I'm missing out on the war factor, aren't I?
Definitely. And, you know, it may be to do with the fact that most guitar bands are boys, right? So
by and large, yeah.
Maybe you would understand it more if there were more female guitar bands. But there's something about a guitar player, isn't there? And according to
I don't know. You have to tell me. That's the purpose of this bit.
There is. And I think it's the fact that it's a talent someone's displaying.
Definitely.
There's an element of showing off. There's a sort of macho thing
but
going
on. But if you get any person of your gender, 99% of them, in a room and say, do you like men who show off? You go, absolutely not. No way. And but ladies are always telling blokes, stop showing off.
I know. And
always.
Yet, I know. And yet, for example, here's one. Prince.
Yeah.
Now, he was a tiny fella.
Yep.
Kind, you know, not my type at all. But there's no denying that when he's playing that guitar, he's giving something off, isn't he? It's some sort of pheromone. It's something invisible. It was amazing.
This is all lost on me, Catherine. Carry on.
So there's that. This as the girl who once went out with a drummer, who apparently they get the least action in the band.
Well, I guess the amount of action that I suspect the bands, when they're good, get, even the drummer won't be going short.
He probably doesn't get the first pick.
But maybe he gets the more interesting ladies.
I'm sure he gets the women of substance.
Yeah.
But the guitar player, there is something about a guitar player.
Right, tell me two or three guitar players that you were in love with as you were growing up.
All right, first one up easily, Nuno Bettencourt. Just a beautiful...
From Extreme. Now, Extreme were a funny old mob, weren't they? Because they were trying to be a rock band. Then they had that hit with that kind of weird ballad. What was that called?
More Than Words.
More Than Words. And then they just stuck with that for the rest of their career. And it was a magazine. Forgive me if I can't remember which one it was called. All the music magazines are closed down now, except The Enemy, which they give away at tube stations. Why don't you just get a knife and stick it in my heart? Why don't you just get a knife, twist it around in my heart? But there was a rock magazine that got into terrible trouble. The only thing that the readers were interested in were Queen, because they're over-specialised, and Extreme, who were kind of a Queen light. And every month, they had Queen or Extreme on the cover, until eventually they gave up the ghost. So Nuno Bettencourt...
There was one.
Yeah. He was big hair as well, wasn't he?
Oh, he was just gorgeous, glossy mane. He was just beautiful. And I was quite into Latinos as well, so he ticked all the boxes. Lenny Kravitz.
Right.
Another one.
Yeah.
Now... Recently, there's been an outtake from a Lenny Kravitz concert that you might want to Google.
Right.
Where his trousers split.
Okay, and this may have been one of the highlights of your teenage life if you'd seen it first
time
around.
Well, if I'd seen it first, it's what I suspected anyway. So Lenny Kravitz, and he was wonderful. You know, I just thought he was wonderful. And there was a bit of an air of dangerousness there, but there's an artistic thing. It's just the whole blend.
It can't be the music, because with the exception of Are You Going to Go My Way,
It was nothing to do with the music. And the other one is Crispian Mills from Cooler Shaker.
Really?
And he's an extraordinary looking fella, because he does look a bit like Hayley Mills, doesn't he?
Well, he's inherited the showbiz gene, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. And he was a funny looking thing, but I thought he was, I thought he was gorgeous.
Now, let me ask you, and this is only because I'm so interested in the human condition. Describe, and don't be unfair to him, but describe Mr. Kath.
Oh, he's quite dark. He's kind of Latino looking.
Oh, okay. So you've got some Bettencourt going on with him.
Yeah, there's a little bit of Bettencourt going on.
Anything else?
But I was going to say, but my first boyfriend was more on the Crispian Mills type. He was blonde.
Right. So do you think that subconsciously you were trying to recreate a great band, frankly, in your bedroom?
Well, yeah, maybe. Now you look at it that way, perhaps. Perhaps
there,
so.
Again, there was another fantastic documentary on television, I would say 3 years ago, probably means 25 years ago, about people who are obsessed in various ways. And, of course, all the usual things, people who drank sort of Kleino Pine for their breakfast, literally that. But the king, she's a queen, actually, the empress of all this, was a woman who was obsessed with Jim Reeves, the old country and western singer.
Okay.
She really was. Now, she was a perfectly ordinary, then middle-aged woman, I think in the north of England, if I'm honest. And she was absolutely obsessed with the fairly, he's white bread and he's fairly vanilla sort of bloke, Jim Reeves. I mean, one of the very first records we had in our house, my parents, when my uncles came from Ireland and brought a dance set, they did allow Jim Reeves into the house. This was good. They showed her house. It was absolutely covered in pictures of Jim Reeves, framed pictures of Jim Reeves records. She had a Jim Reeves sort of bedspread and all the rest of it. But then came the absolute killer, Catherine. A geezer walked into the room. He was much smaller than her and gave off something of a Brian Murphy vibe in George and Mildred. And she said, and this is my husband. He's called Jim.
Oh!
And then she absolutely admitted, I was only really interested in him because he's called Jim. And the poor bloke stood there. I mean, it was humiliating. And maybe, who knows what goes on behind closed doors. He may rule the roost there with a rod of iron. But I don't suspect so. But when she said, I only really was interested in him because he's called Jim, it was just too bad. And so whatever about you trying to piece together some kind of Frankenstein monster of Nuno Betancourt and Crispin Mills in your poor husband. I hope he's not listening to this, is he?
No, he'll be
long since asleep. Yeah, he's not listening to this disgusting plan of yours to replicate a kind of stitched together version of various pop stars. But at least, what's his first name?
His name is Lee.
Not Nuno.
Oh, no.
No, he's called Sadly, Lee. No. Okay, he's called Lee. You mentioned this last night because he's got the monosyllabic name. Okay, so Lee is not really a kind of amalgam of all those things. Thank you very much for sharing. And that was proper sharing, Catherine. You were really letting us in there. You were letting daylight in onto the fetid swamp of your actual psyche.
There's lots of people trying to find that clip of Lenny Kravitz as well at this point, I think.
I bet there are. I bet there are. Lenny Overcall calls me one problem. We were putting him on the cover of The Enemy with Public Enemy, I think it was. And it looked, the picture looked better if we flipped it. But that blinking ring in his nose. We spent days having to re-artwork the whole thing to get the nose ring from one side to another. I have to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, it's only been 2 days. I've been made to feel very much at home by Ed the engineer and by Catherine herself. So thank you both for that. Thank you all for listening to my burblings about this, that, and indeed the other. It's been an absolute blast. Maybe I'll do it again sometime soon. I hope not, because it would mean that Ian's not well. And we want Ian to get well by Monday when we'll all be back. I'll be back tomorrow at 7:30 on Talk Sport for the full-time phone. Until then, God bless you all and good night.
Talk Radio.
Join the Talk Nation.
Dial up and Talk Radio.
We'll get you talking.